like Big Daddy Dog Numero Uno. Number one.
If you had to compare the new 3 Days Grace album, Transit of Venus, to a movie, the band would say Rocky IV. They say a lot of people thought they were over, but they fought harder on this new album than ever before. Well, it's paid off. They've been number one for 6 straight weeks. Here's Chalk Outline.
Straight weeks at number one. That's it for us this week. If you missed any part of the chart, get caught up at the SideshowCountdown.com.
And don't forget, you can listen to us no matter where you are with the free iHeartRadio app.
I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Casey.
And we'll see ya.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead, stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Now.
101.RIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
All right, you're pretty much completely distracted. If you're not in Detroit or in the Detroit area, you probably won't understand this.
But, oh, no, but I think people will.
But it is in the bottom of the eighth of the World Series.
I think other people are watching the World Series besides Detroiters.
It's on national television?
Yeah.
Okay, it's not just a local thing. Yeah, I suppose you're right. Well, it's a very exciting game. It's 3-3, bottom of the eighth. Prince Fielder just struck out.
Politics.
Politics. Is anybody listening?
I think so.
Am I?
I know our diehards are.
Well, go ahead. You take it.
you'll just sit back and watch the game.
Right. So we'll keep you abreast of this. But it's hard. It's really.
I think I should turn it off, Peter. I'm gonna have to turn this off.
No. Wait a minute. Let's.
No.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Turning it off.
Are we on the air?
This is going
She's just turning it off.
I'll go to the website and
all
watch
right.
it.
All right. I'm looking. I'm looking at the box score as we continue. Anyway, hi. It's Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan. And this is pretty critical because if the Tigers lose tonight, boom, four straight. And actually,
Cabrera.
I'm too excited. Cabrera.
I think people are probably, well, go ahead.
Hit a home run with a man on. And that was the first time in the series that Detroit led.
Yeah, I know.
Got blanked two games in a row.
And
awful. What happened?
I think people are probably surprised that you and I are talking even about sports, though. But it's about pride for our city.
Yeah, don't call about baseball.
Yeah. Even though that's all we've talked
that's
about
all we've
so
talked
far
about. Because this is a public affairs broadcast. We discuss the issues of the day. And isn't there something happening, like, in a week or so? What the hell's that?
Oh, maybe the election?
Oh, the election!
Yeah!
Oh, man. Isn't this a great diversion? Between that and the Frankenstorm.
Oh, I know.
That's terrible.
Scary.
I just got a call from a friend in Brooklyn that said he'd been ordered to evacuate because, you know, that's all coastal region.
Not Michigan.
Not Brooklyn, Michigan. No, not the home of the... Is that where the Motor City MIS is? Michigan International Speedway?
I don't know. I've never been there.
No. But if you'd like to call in, 313-298-WRIF, which is?
It's 313-298-9743.
If you'd like to email us, it's talkyes@yahoo.com. Why is my voice like this?
Because I'm back.
You're back?
Yeah, last week you said without me, there was no problem.
You think
I've got some kind of mental effect
it's
on you.
I just start, yeah.
You start getting all
but I wouldn't,
mafia
yeah
on me.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I mean, like The Godfather, because yeah, it just slips a little further and further than it becomes.
Well, it's also been a really, speaking of weather, just kind of a cold and windy weekend. Right. I was out broadcasting before the Tigers.
You were at
game
the Tigers
tonight
game. I can't believe it.
I did the Lions broadcast, then I did the Tigers broadcast. I was out there for 7 hours today.
Speaking of the Lions and the Tigers, Detroit Lions, Detroit Tigers, folks, if you're listening in some other country, or I guess everybody in the United States knows about them, right? And I was in Venezuela, where Miguel Cabrera is from,
right,
and also his the man he mentors, Garcia, and so I kind of wanted to see what was going on. You know, I'm no fan of politicians, particularly even Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela. Mm-hmm. In fact, while I was there, a friend of mine and I took part in an anti-Chavez demonstration that was put on by these indigenous people. Did I tell you about this?
Yeah, and you know what's amazing about that is that so many people will call in and be like, "You Chavez loving blah blah blah," you know.
But what was why this was? These native people had come to Caracas to protest essentially the destruction, the seizure and destruction of their lands. Because if you want to have a modern oil economy, what do you have to do? You've got to have these big super ports that, you know, they can bring in the super tankers. Mm-hmm. You got to, and then coal exploration. So all these tribal people were there. I mean, it was quite moving.
Yeah.
And they weren't, you know, they weren't saying down with Chavez, or, you know, they weren't like right wingers like most of his opposition, but they were people whose land was at jeopardy. And, you know, that's not very good. Anyway.
Well, right. And this is what we're dealing with agriculture.
Yeah. And at some point, we were told that we could come out to hear Chavez speak, but we had to go. We had to get on these buses at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and they would take us at about 20 miles away. And then he was going to speak like at 10 o'clock. And I think I'm going to wait around somewhere for 6 hours to hear a politician speak. I don't think so.
Yeah.
So we hung around Caracas and, you know, checked it out and what have you. And then in the hotel where we were staying in Caracas, Chavez comes on, and my Spanish isn't very good, but I could, you know, it was, you know, kind of simple speech. It was about revolution and socialism, mm-hmm, and Venezuela and Bolivar and the Bolivarian Revolution and all that. You mm-hmm know. So, and I was talking with other people, and there were the people who are really the base of Chavez's support, the poor people, the working class people of Venezuela, who have benefited by you know, Chavez's policies.
Right.
So then he finishes speaking, and in Spanish, one of the hotel employees asks, "Are you done watching the television. And we said, oh, yeah, sure. He immediately turns the channel. And what was happening was the Venezuelan Baseball World Series was going on.
They couldn't care.
That's like us. They couldn't care less about the politics.
Yeah.
And
like, blah, 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 blah.
And you know what the name of the two teams that were in competition were? The Tigres and Leones.
The Tigers and the Lions.
The Lions and the Tigers.
How about that?
That was a long story just to get that out, wasn't it?
Now 7 minutes into the show.
Yeah. And let's see. Wow, no score at the bottom of the eighth. So the Giants are up at the top of the ninth. Okay, let's just talk about a little about what's going on. There was a guest in town to urge Republicans to keep working to elect Romney. Laura Bush. Laura Bush came.
Oh, I missed this entirely.
Yeah, she was in town. She was in Livonia. And,
God, that's where I go to school.
Yeah. Yeah. Isn't there something missing? What, isn't she married? Didn't she marry some guy that was kind of famous, Laura Bush?
Oh, yeah, that,
What was,
the president.
The president, George W. Bush.
The guy who's been in hiding.
Well, they are keeping him in hiding because essentially...
Back off, Jack.
People would think that if Bush endorsed
Romney.
Or stump for him.
But Romney is going to be just like that.
Well, it would be the reelection of George Bush.
Right, yeah. It would be. Yeah. You know, that's what they are saying, but I stand by that too.
How much... I'll put this out to the listeners too. How much would I have to pay you or any listener to get the Romney R, which is like blue and red, tattooed on your face?
What? Wait a minute.
If I said, would you do it for $1 million?
Oh, hell no. I wouldn't have anything put on my face for anything, especially that.
You wouldn't do it for $1 million?
No. And I love tattoos. You know that.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you look at me, you don't know that I have one.
Yeah. I mean, I only have your word on it that you have any. Actually, there is. Can't you see one in the back of your neck?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
But
I see several.
I've been told.
Did you want to see again?
Oh, my God. Folks. It was just the back of the neck. What a very beautiful neck.
They go all the way down.
They do. We have only your word.
Yes, that's right. That's all anyone will ever have.
Well, anyone?
Well.
Yeah.
The listening public.
Yeah. How about me?
Peter.
Let's see.
I've shown you before.
On the air. Now I'm blushing. Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
So quickly you
forget.
Are
we on the air?
Yeah. Are these live?
Yeah. Anyway, so what would it take? How much money would it take for you to get an R tattooed on your face, the Romney R, or for that matter, is there an Obama O? I don't
know. Well, there is, yeah.
A specific one?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, how about this? An Indiana man has auctioned off space on the side of his head where he tattooed Mitt Romney's presidential campaign R logo in a 5-inch by 2-inch.
Oh.
And guess how much he got for it?
How much?
$15,000.
Oh, God. Talk about a nut job.
So you wouldn't do it for $1 million?
No.
Let me ask you this.
No. Have you seen this face?
Yours?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess a woman would probably be less... no, I can't tell this joke.
No.
Tattoo. Woman gets a tattoo.
No.
No, don't you know that
No.
one?
No.
You don't know, but you don't even want to go there?
Yeah. I know when you say you shouldn't say it, you shouldn't say it.
Okay, I won't.
So this guy's crazy.
He says, let me see, who is he here? Eric Hartsburg posted the eBay listing in August and told ABC News that he was paid $15,000 by a Republican eBay user who preferred to remain anonymous to get the Romney logo permanently inked on the side of his head. Hartsburg, who is an Indiana native, told ABC News that he agreed because the tattoo was something he could live with.
And
folks, you got to see this. I mean, it's huge. You know, 5 inches, that's like from
that's
cheek to jowl.
Whole face.
Yeah, right. But he says he's a registered Republican and a Romney supporter. I didn't mind getting this tattoo. He said because it's something I could live with and it's something I believe in. He wasn't so enthusiastic about all of the bids he was offered. Hartsburg, whose fresh ink is only 3 days old, said that he actually rejected the highest bid because it was lewd. What does that mean, lewd?
I don't know.
His only requirement for bidding on the ad space was that it could not be racist or offensive. I guess maybe, I see what he said. He would get a tattoo on his face. And somebody, and the Romney guy came up with getting the Romney R. Well, here's what I think. I think.
Oh.
See, I would do it for $1 million.
Peter.
I'd do it for 100,000.
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah. How much do you think it takes? Maybe some of us, someone can call us and tell us. What does it take to remove a tattoo?
A lot. And many sessions.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
Painful.
Okay, but a million would be something. If it, you know, if say it costs $5,000 to take it off.
Oh, was there a stipulation though,
no, that you have to? I don't know.
You can't remove it.
All right.
You would think for that much money.
You know, you weren't here last week. You were under the weather. God, so many people are getting sick.
Yeah, it's been rough.
Yeah, and you're lucky if it's not hanging on because
Well, after being outside for all of those hours today, maybe
I'm
back.
Down at Tiger Stadium. Well, I began the show by saying that there was a very convincing. Right-wing show I was listening to saying why Romney was going to win the election. But I was watching Bill Maher yesterday.
He was in town last night.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And but anyway, there was a guy on Bill Maher who runs a website. It was like 528.org or something like that,
right.
A numbers cruncher. And he said it's the odds of Obama winning are 75%.
Good.
Yeah, yeah. But now I'm worried. I'm really worried because of the endorsement that Romney got yesterday.
Which one was that?
Meatloaf.
Oh, yeah. That was 2 days ago. That's, oh, God. What a knucklehead.
Well.
He can, you know what? He can have Meatloaf. Meatloaf can have him.
And he changes, Romney changes slogan. He says, I won't let my meatloaf.
Oh, God.
Okay, but he had a good reason.
What a ringing endorsement.
He said, Meatloaf said he approves of Romney's running mate, Paul Ryan, because, according to Meatloaf, I want you to know at 65, that's old Meatloaf is, I guess, that Paul Ryan has not pushed me off the cliff in a wheelchair.
What?
I know, that's what he said. Well, how about this? Here's why he did it. Here's what Meatloaf said verbatim, according to the Washington Post. There is, there has storm cloud, it's hard to say because what he's saying doesn't make a bit of sense. There has storm clouds come over the United States. There is thunderstorms over Europe. There are hailstorms, and I mean major hailstorms, in the Middle East. There are storms brewing through China, through Asia, through everywhere.
Like this just started?
And there's only one man that on the other night when President Barack Obama, God bless him, said to Mitt Romney, the Cold War is over. Meatloaf, still thinking the Cold War is going on, continued, I've never heard such a thing in my life. The man needs to understand Putin and Russia, so I want you to know that there is one man who will stand tall in this country and fight the storm and bring the United States back to what it should be, Governor Mitt Romney.
Oh, please. There's these people on this Russia thing, I just don't understand. It's just such ignorance, Peter.
Well, Meatloaf says he's never endorsed a candidate before.
Oh, well, I'm glad he picked one of the worst ones to endorse.
Right.
What an idiot.
What else is going on? Yeah, I want to, just looking at the game score. Yeah. Nothing's changed according to this. There are so many things going on that, let's just keep on the foolish side of
Why
things.
Why not?
Donald Trump, how in the world? I mean, it's just an immediatized, spectacularized world.
Yeah.
Would anybody listen to this insane piece of work?
It didn't get any weight.
It didn't. Yeah. Donald Trump pledged $5 million to a charity of President Obama's choice if the president made public his college applications and transcript and releases his passport history.
What's he going to find? Oh, he's well-traveled.
I don't even know that he was.
Right.
But,
been kind of busy.
For one thing, why wouldn't Trump just donate that anyway?
Yeah.
And there's always these little subtle appeals to racism because Trump said he can donate it to any charity he wants. For instance, inner-city children's
charity. Oh, he had
charity.
To go right there, did he?
He went right there.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
You know, right off the bat.
He's vile.
Yeah, I know he is.
That's so gross, Peter.
Well,
He's still on this birther thing. He needs to let it go. Anyone who still believes that President Obama is not a United States citizen needs to get a life and get over it. I'm over you.
Well, I thought this was interesting. This has come on. People have been talking about that according to this Associated Press poll, the majority of Americans still harbor white prejudice against black people. And it says racial attitudes have not improved in the 4 years since the United States elected its first black president.
It's worsened.
A slight majority of Americans now express prejudice towards blacks, whether they recognize those feelings or not, because they have ways of eliciting these.
Yeah.
And it says these views could cost President Barack Obama votes as he tries for re-election. The survey found, though, the effects are mitigated by some people's more favorable views of black people. Well, isn't that white?
Well, isn't that mighty white? My God.
Well, here's what I think about that. There is a strain of virulent racism in this country, to be sure.
Yep.
And all virulent racists are voting for
Mitt Romney.
Mitt Romney.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. So we know that.
They can't help themselves.
And that's probably the fascist third that's the core of the Republican voters, you know, all white.
And there's a great deal of it going on in the South. I mean, it's here, too.
Well, I wanted to say that, the vast majority of it is in the South. But here is what none of these, polls are showing, or these news articles are putting forth. Barack Obama got more white votes in 2008 than Kerry or Gore did.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So
and Barack Obama's half white.
There you go. Maybe they voted for that half.
Yeah. Right. You know, they said, you know.
And it is it his mama or his daddy that is white?
His mom.
His mom. And what do they say? They say
like
mom,
in Judaism.
That would be yeah.
If your mom's Jewish, you're Jewish.
Yeah. Or they say. Mama, baby, papa, maybe.
Oh, God. Well, you know, I mean, it just continues to baffle
me. So isn't Barack Obama, we've talked about this before, so isn't Barack Obama white by that logic?
Technically white, yeah.
Technically white?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they're not, the racists aren't going to go with that.
Yeah, I know. Because here we have the racist single drop of blood theory that if you have, whatever the hell that means.
I know.
If you have a drop of black blood in you.
You know.
Well, you know what? Do some DNA, and I bet we almost all do. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a good thing.
That's a beautiful thing. Although
you can go to some white clubs or dance things and see white people dancing, you go,
can I tell you
something? They're pure.
I know. I've got to tell you. I witnessed that very thing today because I was, you know, at this bar right in the middle of the heart of Comerica and Ford Field, Elwood Bar and Grill. Give them a shout out. And there were a bunch of drunk white guys dancing. Just the worst dancers you've ever. They just should stop. It was embarrassing.
Hey, let everybody have some fun. Uh-oh.
It was embarrassing.
Well, the Tigers just batted in the bottom of the ninth, and it's a 3-3 tie, so they're going into extra innings.
All right.
Yeah, and we have some callers, yeah. And, hey, please, don't, you know, we're fearful that it's me and Jalene and the three of you that are on hold.
No, we're not.
Calvin in the other room who's answering your phone calls at 313-298-WRIF. So, one of the things, so I'm reading this story. That the majority of whites harbor prejudice against blacks, and then...
The majority?
Yeah, a majority of whites harbor prejudice. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, 51%.
God.
Yeah, that's... Well, but look at... In Alabama, for instance, in 2000... like I said, Obama got the larger amount of white votes than Gore or Kerry did. So, I mean, that's good.
Yeah.
But in Alabama, 80% of white people voted for McCain.
I could never live there, ever. I would probably, like, harm someone.
Yeah. So, I forgot where I was going with this. Oh, yeah. So I'm reading this article, and I say, let me see the comments on it.
Oh,
so and so all the responses to this were just filled with hate and violence and racism.
Makes me feel sick.
What, you know, it used to be these people had to keep their awful opinions sequestered.
Yeah, because it's so awful.
Yeah. Remember that, you weren't here. This woman at the end of the show. Yesterday,
week?
You were out. She started talking about how awful Obama was. It was the first time she heard our show and what have you.
Oh, I hope she's back tonight.
And one of the things she was talking about was the Obama cell phones. Have you heard this thing?
Oh, is this the insurance cell phones? He has nothing to do with those cell phones.
Yeah, I know.
But they're putting it on Obama.
Yeah, and because on one of the most popular websites in the world, this right-wing site, they had, and this was so horrible, they had this, poor woman who you know, racist white people would call completely ghetto, talking in, you know, in the way poor people do, and saying, you know, Obama gave me this cell phone. I'm voting for Obama. He gave me this cell phone. Mm-hmm. And I can just imagine that 51% going, I know, he must be taking our money and giving it to them.
Yeah, right. Them. More of those entitlements that they talk about.
Well, here, by the way, thanks to Brian for sending me this, the Obama phone. And you can go to Snopes.com as well, Snopes.com. So before you ever start making a fool of yourself and sending
check out the stupid facts there.
Yeah, yeah.
What it is a website that takes, you know, things like this and says, you know what, this is not true, and this is why, and this is...
Or you can go to factcheck.org, and this is from 2009, so this has been going around.
God.
So the question was, has the Obama administration started a program to use taxpayer money to give free cell phones to welfare recipients? And Jalene was absolutely right. The answer is no. Low-income households have been eligible for discounted telephone services for more than a decade, but the program is funded by telecom companies, not by taxes,
right.
And the president has nothing to do with it, although it was initiated in 1984. And who was the president then? Was it a Democrat? No, it was Reagan.
Yeah, you know, and I know people who have these phones. And without it, you know, there are emergencies. And what about helping people who don't have money?
Oh, you're such a bleeding heart.
I know.
Liberal. Yeah. Well, in one of the things, too, people point to there's an article in the New York Times from the October 23rd, strident anti-Obama messages flood key states. And all this insanity from that he wasn't born here and that he's a socialist. His father wasn't even
Muslim.
He was a Muslim. That now there's this new thing. His father wasn't a Kenyan, but was actually this African-American communist and on and on.
It just gets
it's in the blood. You know, if your dad was a communist, you're a communist.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah, my dad's a Republican. So what's that make me? Not one. Thank you. Well, it's the same kind of thing.
Hey. Mama
oh,
baby, papa
it.
Maybe.
Never.
Anyway, so what happens is there's something called SafeLink Wireless. The program mentioned in the email, does offer a cell phone about 1 hour's worth of calling time per month.
1 hour per month. Whoa. Oh.
Yeah. It's run by America Movil, the world's fourth largest wireless company in terms of subscribers. Never heard of it. But it's not paid for by the company. Rather, it is funded through the Universal Service Fund, administrated by blah, 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 like that. So,
well, good.
Another, how many of you out there have heard that racist lie that Obama is giving cell phones?
Obama phones
to welfare recipients. And we know what color all welfare recipients are, don't we?
These people are so disgusting.
Yeah, we do. White.
Yeah, right.
Right?
It's true.
Just the poor people. White.
It's such a freak show out there. That's why shows like this are important. So
I was in a gas station in Birmingham, and a white guy in a Cadillac came in and was buying cigarettes with a bridge card.
Oh, we get that one.
Don't get that one, folks, I'm not even.
Don't worry about it.
To go all about it, but get real. And the important thing about this is, if you can't think clearly about racial matters, you cannot think clearly about anything else.
It's true. I know that sounds like a big statement, but it's true.
Because these morons in Alabama and probably some in Michigan as well, because of some, I don't know, insanity about race, wind up voting for someone who is not acting in their best interest. Let me put it this way. Who's acting in the interest of the 1% solely.
The wealthy.
That's
it.
I'm not trying to say that Obama doesn't have a corporate agenda as well.
Right.
But one of the things that typifies liberals is that they want capitalism with a conscience, whereas the Republicans want to send us back to the 19th century. And you got to remember, without government, without unions, it all looks like the 19th century. Because Capitalism is this mean, mean-spirited system. Left to its own devices, it hurts people tremendously. And all you got to do is look at the working conditions and the pay and everything else. Because within capitalism, unless you have government regulation, you will have these companies poisoning the environment.
Yeah.
And hello, has that happened anything recently with medicine? Remember, so there was, you know, that thing with the steroids, that company that was, you know, sending out that everybody got meningitis and all these people have died.
Yeah.
They weren't regulated enough because, you know, there's something, you know, that we always salute the entrepreneurial spirit. And a lot of entrepreneurs are decent men and women who care about their employers. Yeah. But you know what? Most of them don't. And when people tried to organize to get like the 8-hour day, they called out the National Guard.
They really called out
the Pinkerton detectives. They called out goons. They called out the police to shoot men, women, and children in the back. Just because, and what, remember what it's always about, my little hobby horse, distribution of wealth and income? Because they knew that if people had a decent life, were paid well, were compensated well for their work, and if they had benefits, and if you couldn't work kids and all that, that would mean more money for the people that work for them and less for them. And they couldn't care less about the people that work for them. They weren't going to pay them any more money. So what had to happen was workers had to unionize in order to get a decent wage. And even still, it wasn't working. You know, the cops and the National Guard and the goons killed hundreds of people during the 1930s trying to stop them from hundreds, folks. In order to stop them from getting now what we take for granted until the Roosevelt administration, the New Deal, put in the legislative right to join unions. There was no minimum wage. That was the market. They want the free market, which means the free market in labor. And the more of us there are, the more it drives down the price of labor. And that's what they want. And they want us to compete with labor in China. They want us to compete with labor worldwide. So you got to remember, these Republicans, not all of them, some of them are a little smarter, but I'm surprised that the really rich ones, like the Koch brothers and all that, you know, aren't a little bit more for social peace. I mean, they're the ones that are practicing class warfare, and the rest of us are barely catching up with it.
And not only that, they funded the Tea Party.
Yeah, to make, you know, more problems rather than less. All right, let's do this. I want to get some of you on the air and I'd like to hear your opinions. But does anybody have an opinion? How much money would it take for you to get a Republic or a Mitt Romney
tattooed on your face?
Yeah, 5 inches by 2 inches, red and blue. And this one jerk sold out for
$15,000. What a loser.
I don't know. Would I do it? No, I wouldn't do it.
No.
A million.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julian Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julian will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Inhabitants of Earth, you can run, but you cannot. What are you doing?
I'm watching Netflix on my smartphone, dude.
What?
I can instantly watch as many TV episodes and movies as I want.
You don't fear for your life?
Yeah, not really. Our atmosphere is eventually going to kill you anyway.
Nonsense. Our anatomy is...
There you go. Faster than I thought.
Instantly watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on all kinds of devices for only $8 a month with Netflix. Start your free trial today. See terms of use.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julian Jordan.
All right, thank you very much and welcome back. I guess the only subject that has animated people so far is the thing about the tattoo. This guy in Indiana got paid $15,000 to put a Romney R on his face.
5 inches long.
5 inches. And I was saying, how much would it take for you to do it? And I was also wondering about how much it would take to get it off. Like, in other words, if someone said, all right, you're right, though. So I said I would do it for $500,000 and then get it taken off. But
no.
I wouldn't do it. 313-298-WRIF. I want to get to the calls. Dean wants to talk about Proposal 1, and Eric and Susie want to talk about the tattoos. But the only thing, let me just say this. I was thinking about people that would vote for Mitt Romney. And I was thinking that the only thing that would really make any sense for anyone to vote for Romney if you were anti-choice. because he has pledged to appoint Supreme Court justices, like he said, like the four ultra-conservatives that are on the bench now, Alito and Roberts and
Thomas
and Scalia.
Yes.
Yeah. And this is the most conservative Supreme Court in 75 years. And he wants to put more on. He goes, well, it's okay. I don't mind if they, you know, deny a woman's right to choose. But, you know, there's a lot of other things that are about our daily lives, right, that these that a right-wing Supreme Court is not going to uphold.
Right, but, you know, it's funny how he's gone back and forth on that because he said recently he said that he had no designs on talking about, you know, changing the, you know, Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, but he said he had no legislative plans.
Right.
Yeah, which could mean the Supreme Court.
Could mean anything.
And also, there's in the Republican platform, it calls for the absolute abolition of abortion with no exceptions.
Right. That's where even if someone is raped or if the woman is her life is threatened by giving birth.
Yeah.
They don't care.
So I thought, let me see if this was in here that I saw that, they said so that if a, I think.
Well, there was the one guy who said that, that it's rape is a blessing if there's a child that comes out of it or something.
It's God's will.
My God.
Yeah. So God is this rapist.
Okay.
Yeah. But,
good thing we're atheists. Don't believe any of that stuff.
Right. But now, wait a minute. I was going to... All right. I'll remember it in a second. But let's get some of these folks. They've been waiting a long time. Here's Susie in Dearborn Heights. Susie, hi. It's Peter and Jolene on WRIF. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
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 I just wanted to say I had a tattoo removed. It's been a while now. It's been about maybe 15 years.
Yeah.
But... it was, they charged by the square inch.
Yeah.
At the time, they charged $50 a square inch. It's probably double that or more now.
Or more, yeah.
And it took only two treatments.
Oh, so that wasn't bad.
How big was it, if I may ask?
It was just little. It was on my baby finger. It was less than a square inch, but it was deep. And one of the things that they do is when they do the laser on it, you have to wait 6 weeks because what it does is it zaps the ink and then the ink has to be absorbed by your body. So it takes 6 weeks to see how much is going to go away.
Oh. Hey, do you know what I know the answer to this. I'm just asking if you know. Do you know what the most difficult color is to remove?
I think it's red.
It's white.
White?
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't even know they used white.
I didn't. Yeah, well, they do. They got incredible colors.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mine was just black.
Yeah. Right.
But I also wanted to make another statement.
Sure.
I noticed today, just driving down the street, every year or every 4 years when there's an election, I figure out who's going to win by the signs that I see.
Okay.
There aren't very many signs this year.
Well, here's the thing. Obama's not giving out signs for free. I went to buy one.
Did you buy it?
They wouldn't even let me buy one. They said I had to sit there and volunteer for an hour, which I would do, but I was on my way to school. They did, Peter, and I said, well, my friend,
you,
I said, told me I can buy one for $10. Well, nope, we're not doing that anymore. You can get one at Obama, .com. I went there. I couldn't even get into it. I'm actually a little PO'd about that.
Yeah. I wonder if Romney's giving them away for free.
Well, you know, I told the story how I called the Republican headquarters to see, because I was curious. I was like, wait a minute, the Republicans giving them away and the Democrats are charging? Because all the rest of the Democratic signs were free.
Yeah.
For all the rest of the offices. Mm-hmm. But then the Republican Party of Oakland County here said they didn't even have any, hadn't got any from the National. All right.
Yeah, that was a big disappointment. I would have that sign in my yard right now.
What's your prediction for who's going to win, Susie?
I'm on pins and needles. I'm scared. But I'm thinking a lot of people are not putting out signs because exactly what you said about the racial thing. I think a lot of white people who are voting for Obama don't want their neighbors to know that they're voting for Obama.
You know what? That is exactly...
Do you really think that?
Yes. And
yeah.
I think that's...
I think so.
But that's, you know what, Susie? That's
freaky.
That's exactly why I put it on my lawn.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, thank you.
Well, let's hope that's the case, because then that means a whole lot of more people are voting for him than we know.
All right, thank you very much.
Well, you have to buy the signs. I think that's an issue.
Yeah, appreciate your call.
And now you can't even buy them.
Yeah, I mean, come on, these guys, I mean, they're spending $1 billion.
And how much are they raising? Please.
Yeah. Well, that's what I meant. You know,
yeah, give me a break.
Give you a sign. 313-298.
Give me a sign.
WRIF. Here's Dean in Royal Oak. Hi, Dean. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Dean.
What's up?
Hi. I was at the one-year anniversary of Occupy Detroit at Grand Circus Park, I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wherever it was the first time I was back there. And somebody got on the public address system and they said the emergency manager law is racist.
Okay.
And I think the proper progressive vote on that ballot proposal is no.
Well, I think it's no, but I don't. I mean, initially, it seemed to be that only predominantly black cities were put in receivership, had an emergency manager appointed. But now, what's the one that just some downriver suburb just got put into, and they appointed an African American? Snyder did, but I mean the whole thing. I mean, how can they do that? How can they have a law that you know, you come into a town, you break all the contracts, you can fire who you want, change anything you want. I mean, what's going on here? I mean, that's an insane law.
So you would, both of you are going to vote no on that, because I was just trying to decide
right.
how to vote, and to me, I kind of saw arguments on both sides, but I figured I would just maybe find out from you.
Well, it's a big issue, and I mean, all of them are, actually, this proposal. Now, we should tell people that are not from around here, that are listening around the country, or overseas, as they used to say during World War II, that this is a proposal that has to do with the appointment. They want to make a law that would, it's so complicated. In other words,
just to allow emergency managers.
Would allow emergency managers for cities that are having financial problems. And it's not like the city is going to say, hey, we're having some problems. Can you appoint an emergency manager? This could be done, you know, through the governor's office. And so a no vote would say, no, they don't want this. I mean, the question remains always, well, how do we live in the wealthiest country in the world? How do we justify then cities that are going bankrupt that can't even afford to pay first responders? That's what's fundamentally at issue, and no one's really addressing that. So, all right. Thank you, Dean. I appreciate it. Some open lines at 313-298-WRIF. Here's Eric in Roseville, another tattoo call. Hey, Eric, you're on the air.
Hey, good evening, sir. And after I get done, real quick comment, I hope you let me illustrate why I'm not a racist in 30 seconds. I was just telling somebody.
Who called you a racist?
You did before, but that's all right. Listen, 5 minutes before you came on today, I was telling my daughter about how if Rinaldus Maximus was president, those four people never would have died in Libya. And when this current so-called president's after his eviction a week from Tuesday is on his way out of the White House.
Wait.
Yeah,
what?
Call us in a couple weeks.
Hey, wait a minute, Eric. Who would have been president?
If Rinaldus Maximus, you know who he is, Ronald Reagan.
Oh, God.
Oh, please.
Yeah, all right. He would have probably done what? I mean, do you remember something that happened in Beirut in 1982? Does that strike any...
and I also remember when...
Don't breeze by that. What happened under Ronald Reagan's watch?
Well, I know one thing. There was no call... There was no 8 hours of calls for help, and there was no leaving them unarmed.
Wait. Let's tell people what happened under Ronald Reagan. That under the worst of circumstances, Ronald Reagan, as commander-in-chief, one of the many foul and misdeeds that one of the worst presidents in American history carried out, wound up with how many? 200? How many Marines died? 200 and how many?
Yeah, it was like 240, and I know exactly where I was when that happened. And what it was a truck full of bombs drove through there
sure.
into the compound.
Well, I mean, if you want to lay it at the feet of the commander-in-chief, then that means that Ronald Reagan presided over something that was, I can't even do the math, about 200 times worse than what? And you know what?
People
I mean, you know, I'll tell you what, Eric. You know, when you have that kind of presence overseas, things happen and mistakes are made. And I'll tell you, I haven't even really looked. You want to say, if you want to say that the Obama administration made it, and it certainly wasn't Obama, and there wasn't anybody calling him and saying, hey, should we send any more troops over there? This is, you know, something that goes through the State Department. But the buck stops there. If you want to say, you know, that it's his responsibility, fine. People, mistakes happen in war. People bomb their own men. Supplies don't wind up where they're supposed to. Paratroopers are dropped, and they're dropped in the middle of enemy territory rather than outside of it. I mean, that's the nature of war. And I don't understand why that strikes such virulence, and why you'd be willing to use it in such an opportunistic and cynical way. Well, he had no answer. So, adios, MF.
Later on. Well, we never let him explain. Right along.
The reason, if you think, boy, was I weird to that guy or unfair, this is about the third time he's called.
And he wanted to explain in 30 seconds why he's not a racist.
Yeah.
But, I mean,
you know what? I'll take your word for
if
it.
If you have to call our show to explain why you're not racist, you are.
Yeah, probably.
And you've said some really racist things on this show. I remember your voice.
Yeah. No, well, he's going to have to demand more time.
You can only call once per show. Sorry. Yeah.
Well, I forgot about this when I was talking about Donald Trump's pledge of $5 million to a charity of President Obama's.
Yeah, if he would show his college transcripts
and his application and his passport
and
history,
his passport history,
all of that. But what people think is more important. I mean, most people just laughed that off of what a fool he was. Barbara Walters texted him and said, you're just making a fool of yourself.
Yeah, and he
Donald.
Really is.
Yeah.
You know, the guy's...
Well, no, he's not making a fool of himself. He is a fool of the first magnitude.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
You know, here's
he's
the thing.
Been made.
Trump, he's loaded. He's everything he wanted to be. He's got the hot wife. He's got everything. Why doesn't he just shut his mouth and be happy?
Well, what would you think would be documents of incredible importance? Now, let's go to the worst case scenario, that there's something really weird about Obama's college application that maybe he got in through affirmative action, right? You know, and maybe he didn't really do very well in college after all at Harvard. And for some reason or other, they just decided to make him the editor of the Harvard Law Review.
Oh, I mean, hey, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so that's ridiculous. And I don't know what on his passport history they could even think of. How important is that? Say there was a little, I mean, you know, I don't even know whether there was or wasn't, and I don't even think this is worth even, you know, looking
presenting,
at.
Presenting, right.
Yeah. But what about Romney's taxes?
Yeah.
Now, that is something we really want to know about.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's one of these deals, it's pretty bad, and most people struck people pretty badly that he wouldn't
release
the taxes in the way every other president has and the way his vice presidential running mate has, Paul Ryan.
Yep.
So there's only one thing worse than him not doing it. What's in them?
Yes, exactly.
That's it.
There's something to hide.
Because it's going to be filled with Swiss banks. It's going to be filled with Cayman Islands. It's going to be filled with Bermuda. And pretty much so what Greg Palast released in the Nation magazine, that Mitt and Ann made a fortune off of the bailout of General Motors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isn't that amazing?
They made about $15 million. And, of course, he was against it. He said, let him go bankrupt.
Yep, let Detroit go bankrupt.
So what is more important? And that's what, you know, those of you that saying, you know, man, why won't he show his passport? I mean, don't you think it's a little more important to know that, in fact, that Mitt Romney is not a job creator, but is a job exporter, a job destroyer from U.S. jobs? All right. Here's a good question, too, from Mike and Clyde. Mike, hi. Where's Clyde? Is Clyde in Michigan? I never heard of it.
Yeah, it's just outside of Port Huron.
Okay.
Oh, hi.
Everything's out. If you haven't heard of it, it's outside of Port Huron. Go ahead.
There you go.
What's up?
Hey, I just, nobody's been talking about the fact that, you know, the Republicans are probably going to try to shut down the marijuana laws, and And the fact, too, that we got three states that are trying to actually make it legal.
Yeah, well.
You don't hear much about that anymore.
Yeah, it hasn't. Well, they're so busy getting into women's crotches and, you know, different things like that and being racist. They don't have time to talk about weed, right?
Well, you know, Mike, though, the Obama administration has been shutting down medical marijuana facilities.
And California.
In California. And one of the things, here is the problem. State law cannot preempt federal law.
Federal law, yeah.
And
it's just an issue.
And
a major one.
Yeah. Because, like I always, when we talk about this, I mean, what if Alabama decided they were going to reinstate slavery? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I know that's ridiculous because smoking marijuana is at worst harmless and at best has all these properties that
beneficial
are beneficial.
Properties.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know that there are federal laws against marijuana possession and cultivation and mm-hmm. what have you, and it hurts people when they see that you know Barack Obama, who admits to smoking marijuana, I think he admits to snorting a little coke,
in the past, yes.
Yeah, you know, not like Bush who snorted up half of Peru.
He did.
Yeah, yeah, because Romney.
And old dime bag Laura, Laura Bush used to sell dime bags in college.
Yeah, dime bags, wow.
Remember dime bags?
Yeah, I don't know. Sounds like something from the 60s.
I know.
So, I don't know. You know, it's one of those things, Mike, that Obama should have been a little more forthright. I mean, he's always, and politicians have to do this. All politicians have to do this. They're always fearful that they're going to offend, you know, the center or something like that. You know, like people like you and me and Jalene who think that medical marijuana is fine. He doesn't want to come out and say it because
then he's pushing drugs.
No, yeah.
He's against the drug war.
Yeah.
That's
right.
That's not winning.
Yeah. Well, no, drugs have won. No, not actually, the drugs have won and the taxpayers have lost, right?
Yeah.
And millions of Americans who have come afoul of the drug laws and have become criminals for wanting to change their consciousness or attend to their health.
Right.
Have these blots on their record or just want to get high. Why the hell is that a crime?
I mean, yeah, because I'm telling you what, drinking that bottle of booze, you're getting real high and then you're driving and you're, you know, hurting people.
Well, it's not good to drive on marijuana either.
Well, no, I'm just saying, but alcohol is, you know, just so impaired.
As I always say, war on drugs?
I
can't even drive on drugs.
Yeah. Why? You haven't said some of these for a while, Peter.
Thank you, Mike.
They're almost new to me.
I appreciate it. I'm surprised you don't know them by
I do.
Memory.
I know,
well.
I do.
All right. Let me see. Top of the 10th, Giants at bat, one out, one on second base.
And the Giants are winning 4-3.
They got a...
Yeah.
Oh, they got a run?
I didn't want to bring it up because we were on a political roll.
Oh, man. Where are we here?
Let's just stay right here. We're going to drive people away. Keep going.
Are we on air? Are we
go.
On air? We're on air stuff?
Yeah.
All right. Here's what I want to talk about. I'll talk about this a little because let me be honest with you, folks. I think a lot of people are watching the game. It's pretty exciting. If
it's
Tigers lose
series.
This, pew, we're out of here. The Tigers have to win 4 in a row.
Man.
I think this has been done, maybe.
It has been done.
4 in a row.
It has been done.
Gone from 0-4?
Well, let's not even ask the question.
Yeah, someone can tell us. Right. Okay, there's this thing shaping up in Texas, a legal battle over biblical banners. And in this town of Kountze, Kountze, that... Kevin Welton, who is the school district superintendent of this town northeast of Houston, is getting called all sorts of names in this little town. That he's a Christian man, a predominantly Christian town. He's being called unchristian and even anti-Christian. And why this is happening is that he consulted with lawyers and found and realized that the display of these biblical banners at football games was unconstitutional.
Right.
There was a complaint by the American Civil Liberties Union, and there was also a complaint by our friends at the Freedom From Religion Foundation.
FFRF.org.
Yep. And Mr. Weldon, 53, is in a position that few superintendents in small-town Texas have found themselves, taking a stand on religious expression that has put him at odds with the majority of his students and his neighbors, not to mention the governor, the attorney general, and some in Quincy believe God.
Oh, my.
Yeah, you don't mess with him.
Yeah.
After consulting with
Texas,
with lawyers, Mr. Weldon banned the district cheerleaders from putting Bible verses on the banners they hoist at the beginning of football games out of concern that the signs were unlawful and amounted to school-sanctioned religious expression, which the Supreme Court in 2000 has said is not consistent with the Establishment Clause. The Establishment Clause, it says Congress shall not establish any religion. And
by the way, the game's over. We lost. See you next year, Tigers.
Are you serious?
See you next year, Tigers. No silence.
What? Oh, yeah, we're on radio, aren't we?
Let's just move on.
How could the Tigers were playing so great?
It's very sad.
Oh, the phones are lighting up suddenly. Everybody's back. No, they're not. There's some open line. 313-298-W.
Getting out of that game is going to be a cluster. You know what?
On the line. Right away, all of a sudden, I get David from San Francisco.
Really?
The Giants.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Don't rub it in, David.
I want to finish this story, David, but in fact, I'm going to hold you over the break. But if you rub it in, you got problems. So here's what happened. Out of concern that the signs were unlawful and amounted to school-sanctioned religious expression, the school superintendent, a devout Christian and a former coach, said they couldn't display these banners anymore. But a state judge issued a temporary injunction barring the district from prohibiting the banner for the rest of the football season. So they're going to go on. But, so it was the Anti-Defamation League. I'm sorry, it wasn't the ACLU. It was the Anti-Defamation League and the Freedom From Religion Foundation that did it. Steve Stockman, a born-again Christian former congressman running for re-election in the area, suggested that Mr. Welton's job was on the line. Mr. Stockman said, banning religion is a direct assault on our founding principles.
No, it's not.
This is East Texas, not San Francisco, he says.
Oh, whoa. And now he's a homophobe.
Yeah. The superintendent can either overturn his ban on religion or pack his bags. Mr. Welton said that overall people in Quincy have treated him respectfully. He has attended the football game without incident, watching the Quincy Lions burst through the very banners at issue in the lawsuit.
Yeah, and they have Bible sayings on them.
And what they said was, but thanks be to God, which gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Now, the football team burst through these banners that say, but, I don't know what the but stands for, but, B-U-T, just, you know.
Got it.
But thanks be to God, which gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. So they think that Jesus is backing one high school football team over another?
Yeah, they do. And Tim Tebow, too.
Yeah. But
remember him?
Yeah. I mean, what is up with these people?
Yeah, they're really whacked.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, have a little bit of a cry. Tigers swept in the World Series. Mm. And, we always have the Red. Oh, no, they're not playing.
Oh, that's right. No hockey either.
All right. We'll be right back. Give us a call.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Julene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Clipping coupons. Standing in line at 4 a.m. Buying five to get one free. Maybe it's me, but I don't think it should be that hard to save money. Which is why we made Geico.com so easy. Just a few clicks and you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance. And when you switch to Geico, you can do practically everything online. Report a claim, update your policy, even pay your bill. Click bam boom. Visit Geico.com today. Click bam boom. I'm rather fond of that one.
What do you got for me, Doc?
The victim is male, mid-30s. Cause of death, sudden shock.
Yeah, well, he was last seen browsing thousands of TV episodes and movies online with Netflix.
Explains the traces of disbelief in the brain, but this astonishment residue...
He was watching them all instantly.
Instantly? That's incredible!
Doctor? Doctor!
Instantly watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on all kinds of devices for only $8 a month with Netflix. Start your free trial today. See terms of use.
Listen up, ladies. Breast augmentation is the number one cosmetic surgery among women. And scarless breast augmentation is a better way to go. Dr. Michael Gray of the Michigan Cosmetic Surgery Center and Skin Deep Spa has been the number one cosmetic surgeon for the past 20 years. Dr. Gray, why should a woman choose to have the scarless procedure?
My patients prefer to have scarless breast enlargement because, one, it's scarless. My patients have less downtime, there's less risk of any complications, and they can return to their everyday life much sooner.
So what does that mean?
Many patients are back to work the next day. You can return to your activities sooner, exercise sooner, and do the things you love to do. Your results are beautiful and you're more comfortable while you recover.
Perfect. So how does a woman decide if scarless breast augmentation is right for her?
Come see me for a complimentary consultation. We'll sit down and talk, discuss your situation, and review your options together.
Thanks, Dr. Gray. You can visit anewyou.com to see before and after photos of scarless breast augmentation. For a free consultation with Dr. Gray, call 248-538-3333 or visit anewyou.com.
I'm Dr. Michael Gray. Call me today, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Mike Rowe here at a Ford dealer with a little Q&A for Fiona. According to the signs, Ford is having some sort of big tire event. How would you describe the event?
It's big.
The savings one might enjoy at the event.
They're big.
What about the selection?
Big.
Get a $60 mail-in rebate on four select tires. Use the Ford service credit card for an additional $60. Click on the banner ad.
So I think we can agree then that Ford's tire event is good-sized.
No, Michael. It's big.
Subject to credit approval. Rebate by check. Offer cannot be combined. See participating Ford dealer for rebate details by 11/30/12.
No matter how much our kids amaze us, they can't run for Michigan Supreme Court this year. That's why they need judges who stand up for them.
Michigan Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick have spent their careers protecting families and victims of crime.
From getting criminals off our streets to keeping kids out of gangs, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick are keeping families safer.
As mothers and advocates for children, Connie Kelly, Sheila Johnson, and Bridget McCormick have zero tolerance for violence against women and kids.
Unlike current Michigan Supreme Court justices who suggest sexual harassment is protected as free speech and ruled corporations have no responsibility to prevent workplace assault or even rape, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick take violence against women seriously.
Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick.
These three protect families.
Paid for by the Michigan Democratic State Central Committee, not authorized by any candidate committee.
Whose house is it? Whose house?
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Oh, yes!
Okay. The Riff. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
Thank you very much, and welcome back to our show. There is no joy in Mudville. The mighty Casey has struck out.
Tigers
lost it. Four in a row, swept by the San Francisco Giants. How could it be?
Oh, sad. Yeah. Such a bummer. So bummed.
That's it. I was hoping we played the St. Louis Cardinals.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
Anyway,
we have some open lines. 313-298-9743.
And we're talking about this deal in Quincy, Texas, where the superintendent of schools has told the students that they cannot display these biblical Christian banners.
And it's not even just the banners. It's the banners, you know, where the team runs through and breaks open the banners.
Huge.
Yeah. It's part of the game.
And they say things, but thanks be to God, which gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ. Is there anybody out there that's into this kind of stuff that can make us understand, or the audience understand,
good luck,
how this is all connected, why you would be praying to God or to Jesus for a victory for your team? I mean, don't you think that...
isn't he kind of all about fairness?
Fairness? Yeah. I mean, wouldn't you think he'd
loving
be
everybody.
Even-handed and say, hey, dude, it's up to you. You
know? Right.
Don't be asking me for all this. Actually, this is interesting. It's in this area of the state called the Big Thicket. It's an old-fashioned town of 2100s with a history of religious tolerance. In the early 1990s, residents elected their first black mayor, Charles Bilal, who was a Muslim.
Really?
Yeah, he was the majority white Christian voters made Mr. Bilal the first Muslim mayor in the United States.
Well, how advanced of them.
And his granddaughter, Nahisha Bilal, 17, a Christian, is a plaintiff in the lawsuit. You know, saying that she wants to, keep saying the prayers. So what is the deal? I mean, what is this deal with praying at sporting events? And I don't know. I don't get
Can't they just, like, sing their little national anthem and move along?
Yeah. Play some sports, man. Why do you got to, you know, be shoving? Remember, whatever, you know what we always say? It's past midnight. I can say this. Religion is like a penis, right?
What is it?
Well, it's okay to have one.
Yeah.
It's okay to be proud of one.
Sure.
But don't try to shove it down people's throats.
Oh, my Lord. Don't shove your religion down my throat.
Yeah. You know, I mean, once religion gets out of the place of worship, it gets weird.
Yeah. It's, you know. It's a
am I wrong? Look at other countries and even some of the stuff here. You know, we might, if things
talk about religious intolerance.
Yeah, if things go terribly wrong here in this country, we could wind up with a Mormon president, right? The Mormons were physically attacked by force of arms. They had a, there was an island off of Charlevoix. It was a Mormon enclave in like the 1840s, and these gangs of Christian men from the Charlevoix area went there and attacked them and killed them. You know, weren't they driven out of Illinois and all that? And think about the religious wars in Europe and what goes on between, you know, different sects within Islam and where is it now? Buddhists and Buddhists, no less, are fighting Muslims and Muslims and Hindus.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, once you let this beast unleashed and it stops having its quality of connection with the transcendent, which is, I guess, what they're doing, with the Godhead, with the God figure, then it just turns into this hateful, spiteful, mean, killing apparatus.
Machine.
Yeah.
And I mean, let's go back to why the forefathers created that. They wanted to prevent what you're talking about.
Absolutely. And they'd seen, they'd seen what had happened in Europe. What did I do with that article? Because it just occurred
to me. Which one, Peter?
Here. Yeah. And thank you for reminding me that. Now, you know,
and by the way, there are people on hold, so just stay right there. We're going to get right with you.
So, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about. So here are these people. They want to have this Christian banner that says their high school, they want some blessing from Jesus to win. I mean, how cheap? You know, you don't wish for world peace. You don't wish for...
Well, that's true.
You know, you're wishing, I want my high school team to win.
Like the end
Dear
of...
Dear God, let my high school team...
Oh, yeah, what about the end of poverty? Yeah. The end of war, you know? Call me crazy.
Anyway, so, but what I don't... And here's why these people are inconsistent. They say, which isn't true, that the founders were these devout Christian men. I mean, some of them were these deists and all of that. And they also incorrectly, but insist that the United States, is a Christian nation. But what if there were all of a sudden Muslim banners and people wanted to have slogans from the Quran?
Right.
And they were suddenly in the minority, like this, the mayor of this town was a Muslim. What if all of a sudden, you know, they started getting a lot of Muslims there, and
we want our banner too.
And folks, we're around the largest the city with the largest percentage of Muslims of any country in the United States.
Of any state in the
which
United
is
States. Dearborn.
Nope, Hamtramck.
Oh, that's right. I always forget that.
Yeah,
it's
much smaller. Yeah. But a large number of Muslim people. And how would you feel? How would you feel if you were a devout Christian and there were these, and the football team had to run through this, this banner that had Islamic slogans on it, you know, and I would feel bad if it's Islamic or Judaic or Hindu or
whatever
anything.
It is.
Yeah, I mean,
how about go team go victory?
Yeah. And how about this on Sunday or Saturday or Friday, whenever you do it? You go worship in your church or temple or whatever and make your peace with God. Do good works in the community and
be a good person.
Yeah. And don't get angry at other people that don't agree with you. Wouldn't that be a good thing?
Yep.
They're toxic when they get into the public square. All right, let's go to our phones. 313-298-WRIF. Oh, yeah, we do have a Facebook page, which I haven't even mentioned, which is facebook.com/nightcall. Mm-hmm. You can see the guest that I'm going to have on in just a little while. Okay.
I better get that on there then.
Yeah, be interested. All right. Here's David in San Francisco. David, say one thing about the Giants, and you're out of here, dude.
Hey, Peter, Julian.
Hi, David.
I don't actually need to. I'm near a window, and there's just a helicopter and all sorts of gunfire and shooting and, you know, just hooping and hollering.
Wait a minute. Gunfire in San Francisco?
Well, actually, you know, it's interesting. While you were doing the news at the top of the hour, I actually went up on the roof. And it's, if you've ever been out here, you know, San Francisco can get socked in with fog.
Sure.
And I'm down in what's called the Sunny Mission, even though it's nighttime out here. And so I'm actually in one of the clearest spots in the city. Beautiful full moon. But I look over the city skyline, and it's socked in with fog. Up toward the Castro, socked in. Down south, I'm in like this island of clear. And there's a helicopter flying right above me, and it's so noisy I couldn't give you a report from up above. It's actually kind of interesting. There, you know, the Mission, there's probably more fireworks than gunfire, but every That's once good. In a while you hear something odd. Hey, you know, I wanted to talk about Nathan Sproul, but let's see, I also wanted to add in.
Nathan Sproul, remind us.
Well, he's that guy that the Republicans had hired to do the voter registration, and about a month ago they found out that he was fraudulently...
Oh, yeah.
He would throw away the Democrats, but he was also doing, you know, if people would come up to his people to register to vote, and they were Democrats or third parties or whatnot, they would shred their documents, so they would go to the polls, you know, next week, and they would find out that they're not really registered. And there's many stories. I don't know if you've ever interviewed Brad Friedman of Bradblog, but there are many, many stories out of there, but there are many other. You can just do the Wikipedia search of Nathan Sproul and find.
Sure. Well, one of the, I forgot who it was, Jerry, I think, reminded me that that last week I shouldn't have been talking about voter fraud, which is almost non-existent, but there's electoral fraud, which is almost solely perpetrated by the Republicans.
Absolutely. And these guys,
of that type. Yeah,
what's interesting is that they had, I think, 400, the Republican Party in Florida alone had paid him almost $1.5 million, and he had only gathered 400 signatures for $1.5 million. I mean, it was amazing.
Well, that's good, though. But, you know, that's why, if it's this close, I'm worried that... that this could mean a Republican victory, because they have so many strategies to cheat the process, to work the game, to fix the outcome.
Including the Supreme Court.
Yeah, including the Supreme Court in 2000, that if there's not an overwhelming vote for Barack Obama like there's in 2008, even if Barack Obama wins, that he could be cheated out of it the way Kerry was and the way Gore was.
Well, right, and what's interesting is that the Republican parties of Florida, Virginia, North Carolina, Colorado, and I think California have renounced Sproul. He started out with a company in 2000 called Lincoln Strategies, and then in 2004 and 2008 he was caught up in scandals, and they when they busted him a month ago, it turned out he had changed the company name to Strategic Allied Consulting. And now, even though they've busted him a month or so ago, he's continued to change names. So he's got Grassroots Outreach, he's got Issue Advocacy Partners, and there was a third one. So he's continuing. They're paying him millions of dollars to do this. And the Republicans are obviously, I think they've paid like $8 million this year alone. And it was interesting. I was reading a story from 2004 where the same junk was going on. And they, in their campaign contribution data to the Elections Commission, the Republicans claimed that they had only paid him $500,000 for all of his work, but then it turned out later that they had actually paid him 17 times more.
You know, this sounds like something out of the 1870s, the 1880s. I mean, all of this money $2 billion being spent on these elections where we have cities in Michigan that are going bankrupt. By the way, our caller, David, is calling from San Francisco. He's not at a bar. All of that behind him.
Well, let's not even bring more attention to it.
Celebrations. All right, David, thank you very much.
We're sad here today.
Yeah. Appreciate your call. Thank you very much. There, I wanted to say.
But I like that he's still listening to Night Call.
Yeah.
You know?
Robert writes into calltalkyes@yahoo.com. We were saying earlier about the Obama cell phones, which don't exist.
Which isn't true.
This racist smear that Obama has set up. Cell phone giveaways
to
poor people.
Know what we're talking about when you see you can get these cell phones for free and you get an hour a month. I mean, you know.
So I said on the air that, and Julian said it first, that these don't come from the president at all. This is a nonprofit company that gives them to poor people. And I said this had begun under Reagan in 1984. And Robert writes in, they didn't have cell phones in 1984. Am I missing something? Well, rather than going all the way through this again, please go to my website. I wrote Robert back. But if people were wondering, well, wait a minute, how could that be? Go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com, and it tells the whole story about these cell phones and who's paying for them and what have you.
Also, speaking of your website, I just posted on our Facebook page what guests are coming up in 45 minutes.
Who are?
I don't have it in front of me right now.
All right. Well, let me go to Mike and Jackson in the meantime. Some open lines, too, at 313-298-WRIF. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Hello. If there are 12 or so swing states, what is it about Ohio? The news says whoever wins Ohio wins the presidency.
Yeah.
And Florida.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, I don't think that's true about Ohio. I think Obama could lose Ohio. I don't think he can lose both of them or too many more. I think they think he has now, 200? I forgot how many. I'm losing this all. I can't remember how many votes. I think he has. They estimate that he has approximately 270 right now. And that
electoral votes.
Electoral votes, yeah. And that he has like a 75% chance of victory. But, you know, all these other states are sort of settled. So there's, you know, these are, what do they call the battleground states?
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be nice if it was just about this contest was about 2 weeks long? Would that hurt you?
Sure.
It would be good. Sure, it would be good. I mean, you don't want it
like
to go,
instead of 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, this is. I think this is driving us all kind of crazy, huh?
Okay, so here are the guests tonight at 1 a.m.
Thank you, Mike.
Peter has interviewed Gar Smith, author of Nuclear Roulette, The Truth About the Most Dangerous Energy Source on Earth.
Cheery.
Believe it. And I love this. This is a friend of mine on Facebook.
Susan Whitehall,
music editor of the Detroit News, discusses her biography, Fever, Little Willie John, A Fast Life, Mysterious Death, and The Birth of a Soul. Quite a project that she's taken on here.
I don't know if people know that song. You give me fever.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's been done by so many people and, you know,
and
after.
Little Willie John was a Detroiter, one of these early R&B guys.
Love it.
Yeah. All right. What to do? What should we do next? Here's what I don't understand. You know, I forgot to give you this. You give me stories, I give you stories.
Yeah.
Crucial subset. Female voters still deciding.
How can you still be deciding? If you are a woman and you are voting for Mitt Romney, you're just voting against yourself unless you don't care. You know, I mean, I have women who are past the childbirthing years and they honestly say to me, Julian, I don't care. I'm not going to have a kid. I'm not going to have an abortion, really. Well, okay, what about the fact that it's a woman's right to choose because it's our bodies? And in 1972, there was a little thing called Roe versus Wade, Supreme Court.
Well, they want to roll that back, and that's one of the issues that makes no matter. I mean, there's people on the left that have criticisms, as I do, of Barack Obama on a number of issues. And
the environment. I mean, this is what I was telling one of my instructors in school that, you know, let's start with the environment. He actually had the nerve to say clean coal technology.
That's one of the things that the Republicans are using. They're saying coal country for Romney. And they're trying to make this case that Obama is against coal. Now, we...
And he's not. And he doesn't want to take your guns away.
Yeah. And, you know, our friend, the singer-songwriter, David Rovix, has a song called If Only It Was True.
Yeah.
And he lists all this...
Socialism and...
You know, I should... he sang that the other night. I'll get that up. I'll play that maybe a little later. But all of this stuff that people in you know, people are so concerned about their economic situation, that even though coal mining is so dangerous because of the rollback of regulations that happened under Bush, and I don't know whether they were restored under Obama or not. You would think so. I mean, that Bush...
I don't think they have been. I could be wrong.
I mean, Bush put in the head of the mining company lobbyist as the head of the Mine Safety Board. You know, talking about the Fox...
Watching the hen house?
Yeah, exactly. And then we know there were these catastrophic mine accidents.
Oh, it's terrible.
But regardless, it's a dangerous industry. Coal is poisonous.
Yes.
You know, adds, you know, asthma, all sorts of other, you know, it's a what is it?
Carcinogen.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's easy for you to say. Carcinogens. There you go.
Armadinogen. Come on. Give it to me.
Armadinogen. I can say it. I know.
We have so many little innuendos. People are probably like, what the hell are they talking about?
And so, you know, unions want to keep nuclear power, even though it is, as my guest is going to say at 1 a.m., just so incredibly deadly. And
shut them all down.
But they're more concerned about my paycheck, and that's understandable.
Right.
So people experience this blackmail because, you know, all these employers have been, these big employers have been writing their employees and saying, if Barack Obama gets reelected,
you're going to lose this.
Your job may be in jeopardy.
Line.
So wait a minute. If it wasn't for the first 4 years, why would it be for the second 4 years?
Yeah. I mean, that's, yeah. But with their power, trying to force people to vote against their own interests, really. Yeah.
But this is good. This is from Labor Notes. You can go to labornotes.org. The U.S. presidential election has held up a decision on the Keystone XL tar sands pipeline. But in Canada, unions have joined environmentalists to battle another export pipeline, this one headed for the pristine west coast of Canada. So this, you know, thousands of protesters converged on British Columbia's legislature in Victoria on Monday, demanding the development be stopped. Because normally, you know...
I think a lot of people don't even know what the tar sands pipeline is.
Oh, this is this big pipeline that's going to come through Canada. I mean, this extraction process itself is environmentally disastrous. Mm. And then they're going to have this oil pipeline that goes all down through the United States to be, guess what? Exported.
Because the majority of any oil that is currently extracted in the United States is sent elsewhere. They don't even use it here in the United States. So for anyone who thinks that's the problem, the solution to our problems in lessening our dependence on Middle Eastern oil, well, it's just not true. We're making money off of it by selling it to other countries. Believe it.
You know, it disturbs me. This is going back another story we were talking about. There's got to be people out there. Maybe this isn't something that can be defended on an intellectual or logical basis. This thing about biblical slogans at football games.
Are you still on?
Well,
that?
I'm surprised somebody doesn't say, "Well, we want to have like they have in Texas in this Texas town, that the football players run through this banner that says, but thanks be to God, which gives us victory through our Lord Jesus Christ.
At a public sporting event.
Yeah, sponsored by the school district.
Sponsored by, and it's the actual students who are making these signs and putting them up, some of them.
Yeah, that's kind of the dodge. They're saying that their rights are being violated of free speech.
I mean, I get this. I don't understand it, but like...
Remember, you know, there was a guy who was talking about, and this is the mentality. You know, they're making people uncomfortable. Some people. Maybe a minority of
people. I would
people.
Be outraged.
Yeah. But remember when I asked that guy who was about open carry and, you know, that this is not, we're not talking about beer now in the car. We're
guns.
Talking about a gun. It's, you know, holstered gun. And I said to the guy, you may remember the call. Does it bother you that you make a lot of people uncomfortable? Like if I saw you walking into a place where I was with a sidearm at your waist, that would make me uncomfortable because
immediately.
Yeah, I don't know who you are. You've had like two classes of training and
right.
You've got some issues that you think you got to carry.
Show that you've you're under so much danger going to Walmart.
Yeah, right. And so I said, does it make you feel badly at all that you make people feel uncomfortable? So he kept saying, well, I have the Second Amendment, right?
He said, no.
Then finally.
He didn't even breathe.
No, he did. He went on this whole thing about Second Amendment rights. I said, what I was asking you, does it make you, does it bother you at all that you make a lot of people feel uncomfortable? And he said, no.
Right. He didn't even take a breath.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, screw you.
And
so
essentially, he didn't say it calmly like you, Peter. He was like, no! This guy was.
So here
out of
you
his
are.
Mind.
That obviously people are. I mean, why would you bring religion of this, I don't know, magnitude to a football game?
Well,
I mean, I know
magnitude,
they do it
but even it's narrow because there are a lot more religions than Christianity.
I know, but this is, they'd say, it's a Christian town. We live in a Christian nation. It was founded by Christian men.
Yeah, but not everyone's a Christian in that town.
I know.
I guarantee you.
And so, but come on. It's got to be somebody that can tell me what accrues to the person, the high school, the team. I mean, does anybody believe that Jesus blesses one football team over another?
Right. So the team that doesn't have those banners, they're just heathens, and Jesus doesn't love them.
Well, I bet they all have them.
All the teams?
Well, they probably all did.
I
wonder, though, I mean, didn't Tebow, what the hell?
He had something on his face. Didn't he do something on his face?
And remember, he Tebows,
He does his little amen to the sky.
And he gets down on one knee.
Yeah.
And he's registered that as a trademark.
God, get a life. For real.
I mean, if you're under God's protection, what the hell you got to need?
Yeah, you don't need to worry about anything.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. Let's take a break. And
last segment, so if you would like to chime in on anything that we are talking about tonight, 313-298-WRIF.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Everything that rocks worldwide. You're listening to WRIF.com.
No matter how much our kids amaze us, they can't run for Michigan Supreme Court this year. That's why they need judges who stand up for them.
Michigan Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick have spent their careers protecting families and victims of crime.
From getting criminals off our streets to keeping kids out of gangs, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick are keeping families safer.
As mothers and advocates for children, Connie Kelly, Sheila Johnson, and Bridget McCormick have zero tolerance for violence against women and kids.
Unlike current Michigan Supreme Court justices who suggest sexual harassment is protected as free speech and ruled corporations have no responsibility to prevent workplace assault or even rape, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick take violence against women seriously.
Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick.
These three protect families.
Paid for by the Michigan Democratic State Central Committee, not authorized by any candidate committee.
Rockin' Detroit at 101.1 FM and the rest of the planet online at WRIF.com. We'll be right back.
WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. This is our last segment, so if there is something you wanted to say, now's the time. 313-298-WRIF. Here is John. John's in Oak Park. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, well, the only thing that I wanted to say, and I'm not trying to blast anybody, was about your comment about the football team, and they had their banner, and it said, through Jesus Christ, that we make our victories.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I think that that's, I am a Christian, so I will say that. However, you were saying that it makes other people feel uncomfortable or how other people would feel, be outraged by it. But that would kind of be the pot calling the kettle black, I think, if you think about it. Nobody's saying that those other people who have those other religions can't do the same.
I wonder, though. You know, that's an interesting question, John, whether if someone said, well, they want
really quick, Calvin, there's a call coming in. If you could grab that, please. Thanks.
Yeah, that, you know, if someone had an Islamic banner, if somebody had a Hindu banner or something like that, I bet it wouldn't fly. I suspect not. I mean, I think this is, you know, part of the problem is, and that's why the court holds what they do, that these take on at least a semi-official appearance. So it amounts to what, you know, contrary to the Constitution, an establishment of religion. But maybe, being a Christian, John, you can tell me what function, why would somebody want a banner at a football game that talked about, you know, had some, it's not even a biblical saying. They're saying, I mean, they're calling on Jesus to grant them a victory in a high school football game. And doesn't that seem a little crazy?
Well, they're kids. I mean, they're okay. Going to express it in their own way. But I will say this, I served over in Iraq twice, and I use Jesus as the reason why I made it home safe.
I can understand that.
Well, I can understand that, but this is a football game, and This is not a religious high school. This is, right? Do you get that?
Yeah, who knows? If I was there, although there is a group of, but anyway, you know, one understands. I mean, there's, although it's not true that there's no atheists in a foxhole, as they used to say during World War II, probably, you know, you're in circumstances that would lend itself to doing exactly what you did. But what's the function in isn't that a little cheesy calling up? I mean, you're talking about, listen, my life, I'll be, you know, I am your devoted servant. I believe in you, you know, devoutly. But then these other people say, I want to beat the other team. Help me, Jesus. That's crazy. I mean, you think Jesus would listen to that?
Well, I don't think that he would grant one team over the other.
There you go. So why do it?
So, yeah. Why is it even there?
Well, if you think about it, too, the people who are real high-strung on the Bible and Jesus and having them in their life, maybe they had people who were in the military or they had people who had instances in their life where they really called on him. And so they kind of bring that into their own life.
Well, you know, these players, why don't they just say a little prayer themselves before the game? I mean, then isn't that enough?
Lots of them do.
Why must there be a sign? It's offensive to people who are non-Christians. I would be highly offended. I probably wouldn't go to the game.
Well, they'd probably then stay at home.
Yeah.
All right, John, thank you very much. Appreciate it. My guest,
and glad you made it home.
Yeah,
from Iraq. I mean, very
whatever the circumstances
grateful.
Were.
Yes.
And, my guest at 1 a.m., Gar Smith, who is was the editor of the Earth Island Journal.
And,
so we were exchanging emails, and he wrote to me via con Gaia. You know, via con Dios, go with God.
Oh yeah, Gaia, who's a pagan goddess
of nature. Yeah. So I thought you'd be more impressed with that.
Well, that's pretty cool. I like it.
Thank you. There you go. That's what I was trying to get on you. Right. Here's Carol in Detroit. Hi, Carol. You're on the air.
Peter, I was concerned about the women out there who were the undecided voter, and the fact that maybe like you spoke about it earlier, maybe they are concerned about the economy, and they figure, well, the heck with women's rights, the economy is more important than women's rights. And I'm thinking, well, I'm concerned about the economy too, but at the same time, I'm concerned about women's rights also. And the fact that Romney doesn't care about them, nor does his vice president nominee.
No. Well, you know, they're actually a friend of ours here, a colleague, said that. She said she supports gay rights, marriage equality, woman's right to choose, the access to contraception. But she said those are side issues compared to the economy. Well, let's say they were. I mean, which I don't think for a second they are.
I don't either.
But let's say, for a second, that they are. Romney has no plan whatsoever. Well, he does. He has an incredible cockamamie plan where he's going to give everybody, including his rich buddies, this 20% tax cut that's going to create this $5 trillion in the deficit.
Yeah.
And somehow this is going to mean more jobs. Well,
yeah.
No one that has looked at it has said this makes any sense whatsoever.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and that's my biggest concern. I understand where some women are coming from, but
you do,
when
I don't
start trampling over my rights, then that's an issue that's very important to me.
Wait a minute. Let's back up. I kind of talked over you, and I think you're trying to be very nice, which I rarely try to do. You said you understand where these women are coming from.
Well, I understand.
And I said I don't.
Well, okay. Peter, I understand where you're coming from, and I completely
okay.
understand where I'm coming from. I understand where they're coming from. Really, I'm concerned about the economy too, because I've got a niece in college right now, and I'm helping my mother out. You know, my concerns are there, but at the same time, I'm concerned about my rights too as a woman.
Sure.
I don't want Romney to trample over them, and I guess I'm concerned about both issues, but I don't want
an entire gender to get the
exactly.
I mean, essentially, Barack Obama's policies prevented another great depression. I mean,
okay, and I agree with that one. Yeah.
The economy was on the brink when he took office in January 2009.
Thanks to GW.
GW yeah. and Ronald Reagan
Eight
and some extent
that.
Clinton, but mostly Republican policies of Reaganomics and this trickle-down theory of supply-side economics. And this is exactly what Romney is repeating. It's like they learn nothing. It's like somebody that goes into a bar, and every time they go in to a bar, not only do they get into a fight, but they get the crap beat out of them, and they keep going back. And they pour big drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah, come on.
And one more thing. The jobs report is coming out on Friday. If it's not good, then there's still no guarantee that Barack Obama is going to be put into office. But if it's bad, then we know that, it sort of makes you wonder what's going to happen.
Well, right now,
people are so reactionary and compartmentalizing right here and right now.
Given the economy, given some of the sub-issues that are so disturbing about this contest, I still think that either if Barack Obama loses, I think he will join the other Democrats like Gore and Kerry, who essentially had the election stolen from them. So we shall see. It'll be interesting. Thank you, Carol.
Thank you.
Appreciate your comments. 313-298-WRIF is our phone number. And here's Darius. Darius is calling from Colorado. Hey, you're on the air. Welcome. How'd you find out about our program?
Oh, this is Dave. I've been talking to you guys for a while.
Oh, okay. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. I drive down to Texas twice a week from Denver, and I've been doing it long enough to get to know some people there.
Yeah.
One of my colleagues is a retired Air Force sergeant, Baptist preacher, very conservative, but I respect him immensely. He says that the cheerleaders are the blind because they presume that God is on their side, and rather than saying, we'll do our best, we'll leave it on the field, and thy will be done.
Yeah.
And he's not at all politically tuned to me at all, but I can sort of see it his way.
Well, you know what, though? I'll tell you know, this is the rationale for every religious group that attacks another religious group. God is on their side and not on the other people's side.
Yeah, how does that work?
Because I, not they, have the correct interpretation of the Bible or the Quran or the, you know, whatever the other particular books of different religions are. And then young men go out and try to kill
in
other
the name
people.
Of that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I mean, religion's been a bloody sword. I mean, certainly you can chronicle the good things that religious people do, the charities, the kindness that some people act out. But in the main, organized religion, when it moves outside of the local community or particularly the religious institution, it turns out to be a pretty bloody affair. And that's why the founding fathers wanted no establishment of religion.
Speaking of which, kind of peripherally, one of the little towns I go through, I'm just starting to pick up on this, in North Texas has about 400 people, and somehow half of them, roughly, are Sikhs. That's like KH.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I don't know how this works, but you see people wearing, guys wearing turbans and dark skin wandering around. I wonder if this school in... with the biblical cheerleaders ever played Vega, Texas, and how that goes over.
Yeah, and then their players burst through this banner with Sikh religious statements. All right, thank you very much for joining us from so far away.
Yeah, I appreciate it.
Here is Brian in Livonia has a story for us. Brian, hey, it's Peter and Jalene. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thanks. Love you guys' show.
Well, thank you.
You're awesome.
Thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
A while back, I heard this story on a public access show in Austin, how this, right-wing Christian guy moved from one school in Conus out to Hawaii. He gets on the football team, and he hears that they have a prayer before the game, and he's loving it, He's all for it.
Okay.
Then he finds out it's a Hawaiian prayer.
Well,
all of a sudden, he wants religion out of the school.
Well, yeah, that's what I say.
Surprise, surprise.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, it's when it's convenient, right?
Right.
Well, when people have strong beliefs, they want to put them forth. I mean, I do. It's
one of the reasons,
one of the reasons I want to do this show. And,
yeah, but the hypocrisy is when it's only their own belief.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
Exactly.
And nobody else.
But I'm not going to go into people's homes, for instance, and, I do start talking about politics, but, sometimes I can
usually we're approached, people want to talk to us about it because they know what we do for a living.
Some of my family gatherings, people would start talking about politics and I remember my aunt would always say, no politics, no religion,
Right.
Like that.
That's kind of the rule.
We've all got that coming up too.
I mean, at Thanksgiving?
Yep.
Not me. I work every holiday. I avoid all that.
Right.
All right.
Yeah, I had another.
Or I go to the Warby's where we think alike.
Yeah. Oh, I got a potluck to invite you to. Anyway.
Oh, good.
All right. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Brian.
You're talking about the women's rights and the whole, thing about Romney, and some of your callers are, especially the female ones, are saying, well, we're putting women's rights on the back burner because the economy is more important.
No, well, no one said that. No, none
someone
of our callers. Someone we work
it.
With said that.
Well,
yeah.
To them, well, yeah. I still hear it, even with my own friends and family. But
yeah,
how hard is it to restore rights versus restore the economy?
Well,
I would think it's a lot easier to restore the economy.
Well, yeah, unless you're getting a lot of opposition. I mean, like I said, Obama saved the economy from collapse. And those rights, think about the rights.
Yeah, when the Supreme Court comes into play, you're right.
Think about the rights that were necessary to end slavery, including the Civil War. And,
women's right to vote.
All that
shoes.
Stuff. Yeah, all that stuff.
But why wouldn't that trump the economy right now?
And also, I don't know, but I mean,
I think it does.
Anybody, I don't
know. Well, look how long it took for us to get, Roe versus Wade in the Constitution.
Yeah.
Well, but the real thing is if you were saying, okay, I had to make my choice between Mitt Romney restoring the economy or women's rights, which will I choose? I mean, Romney has no plan other than this insane plan, which is already, which essentially got us into the mess we were in the first place, and really has no plan. In fact, I'm not even sure why he wants to do this, or why the Koch brothers or these other billionaires that that have been funding Romney and the whole right-wing teabaggers and all that. I mean,
do you know why?
Well, no, here's why I don't know why. They've got billions of dollars anyways. What do they want? They got billions and billions. Do they want billions and billions and billions?
Yes.
Then they're nuts. Then it's just psychopathology.
No, I mean, you know why Romney wants to do it.
He wants the, you know, the deal.
He just wants to be president. That's
yeah.
it.
That's true.
He doesn't want the job. He just wants the title.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, he's wanted that for a real long time, hasn't he?
Yeah. Who's that guy? Grover Norquist.
The tax
guy.
The anti-tax guy.
Yeah.
Right.
All they need is a guy that can hold a pen.
Hold a what?
Hold a pen to sign the
bill. Oh, hold the pen.
Law.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He said that we've got all the policies. We know what we want to do. We know what the laws we want to put forward are.
Yeah.
All we need is a guy that can hold a pen.
Oh.
Well,
and that's exactly what they're doing with him.
Well, let's try to assure that that does not happen.
Hey, thanks,
Thank
Rosie.
You, Brian.
I like Appreciate how Brian it. Thinks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I got to tell you, folks, that the reelection of Barack Obama will not usher in a restoration of the 1950s or even the 1990s under Bill Clinton when things were a lot better. But, you know, they weren't all terrific. In fact, some of the things that finally came to fruition under the failed presidency and the stolen presidency of George Bush probably are going to be faced with what we have currently for a long way into the future if we let other people decide our future.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Mitt Romney presidency will be disastrous on almost every level imaginable. And Barack Obama, as I said, for all the problems with, I essentially prevented a Great Depression. And the Roosevelt New Deal, which gave, essentially created a middle class, is in the gun sights of these right-wing Republicans and Romney is their empty suit who would say anything, say anything, essentially. He hasn't done anything yet, but will say anything.
He makes things up, too, and he gets things wrong all the time.
What was the thing about the Jeep?
Do you have
that handy?
Yeah, somewhere around here.
He was, saying that now, he's Mr. Outsourcer, right? He has...
Yeah, Romney picks up incorrect story about Jeep production moving to China. He told a rally in Ohio on Thursday night that Chrysler was considering moving production of its Jeep vehicles to China, apparently reacting to incorrect reports circulating online. He said, he saw the story... I saw the story today that one of the great manufacturers in the state, Jeep, now owned by the Italians, is thinking of moving all production to China. I will fight for every good job in America, which he's lying. He wants to de-unionize this entire country.
Exactly.
I'm going to fight to make sure trade is fair. He's lying about that. He wants free trade, not fair trade. And if it's fair, America will win. I mean, what a blanket BS statement. This guy is just repulsive. Then Romney says, Romney was apparently responding to reports on right-leaning blogs that misinterpreted a recent Bloomberg news story earlier this week that said Chrysler, owned by Italian automaker Fiat, is thinking of building Jeeps in China for sale in the Chinese market. And so he was going off of just something that someone made up.
Sure.
And so then the spokesman for Chrysler, let's set it the record straight. Jeep has no intention of shifting production of its Jeep models out of North America to China.
And Romney said he made a mistake?
No, he never does. Obama's spokesman said Romney shamefully tried to scare voters tonight into thinking Jeep production moving to China. And it is false. So, you know how they say don't believe everything you read or hear? And when you're running for president of the United States, you might want to do a little fact-checking before you open your big mouth.
Don't you remember one of his spokesmen said, you know, our campaign is not going to be run by fact-checkers?
Well, they've held true to it.
What is, what's his name that's right after,
Who? What? Where?
Stephen Colbert.
Okay.
Truthiness.
Yes, see, yeah. It's truthiness.
Yeah, right.
In quotes.
On a totally different subject, this was so disturbing. You know, this, is it George Zimmerman? That's the guy who shot and killed Trayvon Martin?
Yes.
And he claimed that it was a stand your ground law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That little gem of legislation.
Were you with, no, you weren't with me in Kalispell, Montana when I was up there. Jillian and I had a nationally syndicated show a few years ago, and we had some stations out there in Montana. One was in Kalispell, Montana. But here, get this. The last mistake Dan Friedenberg made was getting killed in another man's garage.
Oh, yeah.
It was September 22nd, and Mr. Friedenberg, 40 years old, was upset. He strode up the driveway of a quiet subdivision here to confront Bryce Harper, a 24-year-old romantically involved with Mr. Friedenberg's wife. As he walked through Mr. Harper's open door, Mr. Friedenberg was doing more than stepping uninvited into someone else's property. He was unwittingly walking into a legal landscape reshaped by laws that have given homeowners new leeway to use force inside their homes. Proponents say the laws strengthen people's right to defend their homes to others they are licensed to kill. Mm. That night in a doorway at the back of the garage, Mr. Harper aimed a gun at the unarmed Mr. Friedenberg, fired, struck him three times with a shotgun. Mr. Friedenberg crumpled to the garage floor a few feet from Mr. Harper. He was dead before morning. If he would have been shot on the street or the sidewalk, he would have been charged with murder, but in the Flathead County Attorney decided not to prosecute, saying that Montana's castle doctrine law, which maintains that a man's home is his castle, protected Mr. Harper's right to vigorously defend himself there. The county attorney determined that Mr. Harper had the right to fetch his gun from his bedroom, confront Mr. Friedenberg in the garage, and fearing for his safety, shoot him.
Yeah. I mean, what do you...
It doesn't get any great. This is the armed madhouse in which we live. I mean, there used to be that defense had to be commensurate with the threat. So the guy's unarmed.
This story confused me because young one who was having the affair
with the dead guy's
shot
wife...
Shot him.
Shot the husband.
The husband.
The husband was pissed off because the guy was boinking his wife.
Right.
So he came over.
Let's put it in brass tacks.
Yeah.
There.
So he comes over there angry.
Oh, well, he was at the boyfriend's house.
He went to the boyfriend's house.
All
to confront
right.
him. But, you know, just like the George Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin
Standard
situation,
ground.
We don't, well, yeah, it's similar like that. But
the only people who know are those two people.
Yeah, I mean the only man left standing. I mean, we don't know what
is the one who did it.
Yeah, we don't. Yeah, did George Zimmerman have a reason to fear for his life from Trayvon Martin? Well, yeah, because that's what George Zimmerman said.
Right. Oh, and you know, those Skittles. I mean, you know
that he was carrying.
Yeah, scary.
Yeah, Trayvon Martin was, and the same thing here. This guy Harper said that he felt threatened. So what does that mean? Did the man that Harper killed, did he say, I'm going to beat the crap out of you if you ever see my wife again? Or did he say, I'm going to beat the crap out of you because you're boinking my wife?
Right.
Or did he just walk through the door and Mr. Harper said, hey, he's in my castle?
And shoot him. I know about that law.
And if you have a shotgun, I don't know, you know, what gauge it was, but anything sold at close range, whether it's, you know, anything like a 20 gauge up to a 12 gauge, is just going to blow somebody apart.
Yeah.
Right? And he shot him three times.
Yeah. I think this whole little story in the New York Times is just another argument for just not boinking other people's wives.
Well, that's not what I took out of it, actually.
I'm just saying.
Yeah, well, it is. Well,
this could happen to you.
One does not expect to, wait a minute. It wasn't the guy who was boinking that got shot.
I know.
Yeah.
Well, it's just bad things can happen.
Yeah.
You
and,
know?
And now...
Get a divorce and move on.
It's not human
that's
nature.
Listen, so I'll tell you what. If I had an affair, my boyfriend, I don't even want to think about what he would do. I'm not even kidding. Why are you looking at me like that?
Well, don't tell him to come in my garage. Or tell him not to come in my garage.
But we're not having an affair.
I know.
Even though most people out there think we are married.
They do?
A lot of people do. I've had people tell me that they've thought that for like 5 years.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, we always say we live at our house. What do we say?
But in our neighborhood.
We talk about in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
And
you're my, I call you my radio husband. Although my boyfriend doesn't mind that. So
he doesn't.
You're cool.
Okay.
You're cool.
Cool, dude.
He's not coming to your house.
Yeah. I'm about to come in my garage.
Don't mess with me.
Hey, but no. You know, and I was thinking, too, that, you know, this got a lot of play. But there were so many mass murderers last week. I mean, we just take it for granted. Barely
we
even make
them usually the mass murder of the week. Now it's mass murderers.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot, you know, it's interesting. It's usually that they get the big play when someone goes into a beauty parlor or when they go into an office building. But, you know, there's just these neighborhood shootings that people are, you know, pissed off about this.
Yeah.
Or dope deal gone bad.
Right.
Something. I mean, there was in Detroit and some little 4-year-old or 2-year-old got wounded this week. And
ugh.
And all these people that want everybody to have guns, they say, well, wait a minute. Everybody, you know, the everybody's included the people that carried out these. So,
yeah.
And I'm surprised nobody's going crazy on this because you want to take away our guns.
I think our town is depressed.
yeah, we're depressed.
I really do.
About the lost Tigers.
The Tigers.
Lost, yeah. But I have no solution because, you know, there are so many guns out there,
yeah.
So many of them are, and a small...
Legal and illegal.
And there's an infinitesimal number in the hands of wrong people, but enough to create this kind of slaughter that
yeah.
goes on. And what's
most
my solution?
Country, you mean,
I have none.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
which is pretty crazy.
Yeah. I just... It is one of those subjects that I know that we're going to be talking about until
sure.
the
maybe,
end of this show.
Maybe we ought to... ban assault weapons, but God, Obama wouldn't do that. He never did anything. Who did? Oh, Mitt Romney.
Right.
He banned assault weapons in Massachusetts.
Well, and the thing is,
signed
you know,
the bill.
With the
yeah.
poverty, the crime rates go up, and so it's accelerated to heights unknown to mankind.
Let's go home to our homes.
Our separate homes.
Our separate homes. Yeah. Hey, thanks for listening. Calvin,
thank you
so much. Yeah, there'll be a podcast up at noon tomorrow. And
we'll see you next week.
Yeah.
Good night, Peter.
We'll be doing it.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
Look who's back.
WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Oh, who's the star?
Everything that rocks. Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werby here with you. Over the last few months, I've had a number of shows about nuclear energy and the dangers that it presents to our community and actually to the world. And one wonders almost, is there more to say? I've come across a book that the answer to that is a definite yes. It's called Nuclear Roulette, The Truth About the Most Dangerous Energy Source on Earth. It's written by Gar Smith, and Gar Smith was on my program when he was the editor of the Earth Island Journal, and I would highly recommend that as a publication. He's also a Project Censored award-winning investigative journalist and co-founders of Environmentalists Against War. I'm going to ask him about that. That's intriguing. He's covered revolutions in Central America and has engaged in environmental campaigns on 3 continents. And he lives in a low-impact solar-assisted lifestyle. In fact, in Berkeley, California. He's at his home now. Let's welcome back Gar Smith. Gar, welcome back to the Peter Werby Show.
Good to return, Peter.
The book itself is so interesting, but the description, I want to spend a little time asking you about some of this. I didn't know you covered revolutions in Central America. Tell us a little about that, and then we'll get to the book for sure.
Okay, very briefly, there was no gunfire involved, but there was a threat of sudden dispatching by machete. I've been in Grenada and Nicaragua during the elections, and I had an opportunity to see people striving for democracy in very dramatic ways.
Mm-hmm. And environmentalists against the war. I have often said, in fact, I've even written that, that any environmentalist would certainly be against the Middle Eastern wars, I mean, in that they're wars for oil. What? I've never heard of the group, though, environmentalists against war.
Yeah, we were actually formed in the lead-up to the Second Gulf War. A lot of us had worked together trying to prevent the First Gulf War, and we put together a prediction of all of the bad things that could happen, including oil spills in the Gulf and oil fires, and it all happened during the first grievous assault on the region. So we tried to stop a second war. We came together a month before the U.S. invaded, and alas, we weren't able to do anything more than try to educate the public.
Yeah, and be able to say at this point, everything the critics of the war said turns out to be true doesn't give us much solace, does it? It was a disaster on every level.
Yeah, we had a case of survivor's guilt because we actually saw the things, our worst-case scenarios. We thought these were our worst-case scenarios, and we saw them actually happening. And we had predicted them, and we weren't able to do anything about it. And you really feel bad at that point.
Well, Gar Smith, is environmentalists against war still active?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So
we have a website.
Yeah, tell us.
It's Enviros Against War.
Enviros Against War. Okay, I'll put a link.
Even that is a little cumbersome.
Yeah, I'll put a link on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. There'll also be a link to Gar Smith's book, Nuclear Roulette, The Truth About the Most Dangerous Energy Source on Earth. It's by Chelsea Green Publishing. One more thing, and we'll get to the book. You say, this description of you says you live a low-impact solar-assisted lifestyle in Berkeley, California. Probably a lot of people are like, wow, yeah, man. You know, we're here in the Midwest. There's not a lot of people living low-impact solar-assisted lifestyles here. What does that mean?
Well, it means I've had a solar box cooker for about 20 years. I got started in this a long time ago. But living in California, we're really putting the emphasis to our logo, the Sunshine State. As of last November, we had installed more than 100,000 solar panels on our rooftops in the state, and we are now generating more than a gigawatt of renewable energy into the grid.
Well, speaking about the war in Iraq, the last vice president before the current one, he said that low-impact solar-assisted lifestyles in Berkeley, California, are just gestures. They don't mean much. What do you think?
That's an oil man talking.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there a lot of what powers the pro-nuclear argument is. It sits on three posts. It's this tripod position of hubris, denial, and deception. The idea that we're capable of solving an energy problem by using a technology that's as chancy as nuclear, denying the actual risks involved, ignoring the fact that we still haven't figured out a way to store all the nuclear waste. We think about, we're told that nuclear power produces electricity. That's not true. It just produces heat. There are a lot of ways that we produce heat, and the heat can be used to produce, among other things, electricity. It can fry an egg. It can also create electrons. But the other thing that nuclear power produces is garbage, and it produces more garbage. That's the great legacy than it does electrons. Electric power is transient, but the garbage is going to last in a radioactive state for some of it 25,000 years.
The waste, the nuclear waste. Well, couldn't in your book, Nuclear Roulette, The Truth About the Most Dangerous Energy Source on Earth, couldn't it have been one page and said, we have no way to store nuclear waste that'll be dangerous to humanity and the other species on the planet?
You'd think that alone would have put an end to nuclear power. But it wasn't until June of this year that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission finally looked that problem fair in the face and said, you know, we're going to stop licensing new reactors until we figure out how to store this nuclear garbage.
Mm-hmm.
This is a watershed moment. And perhaps it's because the current chairwoman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission is Allison McFarlane. And she's a scientist. She's a geologist. So perhaps she has a broader understanding of the real-world risks of this energy when it's applied.
Well, what about the Fukushima? That really was a game changer, to use a current phrase, wasn't it, or was it? Did it?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. It according to Natalia Makarovna, who is one of the liquidators who helped deal with Chernobyl, she was asked that question: is Fukushima worse than Chernobyl? And she said, definitely. It's three or maybe four nuclear reactors in a populated country. All melting down. It's at least eight times as critical as Chernobyl. And the Chernobyl radiation, by the way, is still around. It's still circulating through the atmosphere of our planet and raining out. And the same is true of Fukushima. The radiation levels are still worrisome in the reactors. They haven't been able to safely get inside some of those reactors to do the necessary repair work that they need to do. Some of the recent news is that they've had to start mixing nitrogen gas into reactor unit number one in order to prevent an accumulation of hydrogen to the point that they'll have another explosion.
Well, one of the things that we've had to face, let me put it a different way. Aren't we lucky that there's none of those reactors, none of those bad boys that melted down in Japan are around us, right? Or are they?
Well, as a matter of fact, we can't relax on that score either, because those Japanese reactors were designed and built by an American company known as General Electric.
Uh-huh.
Those are Mark III reactors. And when you look at what happened on the coast of Japan after those tsunami waters flooded the reactor site, the cooling systems went down. And what happened next is very troubling. We had not just one meltdown. We had three reactors blowing up with hydrogen explosions, one after another. One, two, three. And what that tells you is, this is not coincidental. This is a design flaw. This is something, those reactors are not only designed to produce heat, they're also, unfortunately and unwittingly, designed to explode. And we have currently 23 Fukushima-style GE Mark I reactors located in 12 states in the U.S.
Including Michigan.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it strikes me that almost what you're saying, and what I get this feeling every time I speak to somebody about nuclear power and the dangers and the waste and forgetting about the money and all of that, is that I almost want to put my fingers in my ear and go la 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 la, because it gives me the most incredible sense of powerlessness. I mean, particularly when you talk about clouds of radioactivity that are still circulating around the planet from Chernobyl, which was how many years ago?
Oh, gosh.
25, I can't do the math. 26.
I can't do the math in my head, but.
Yeah. And you know, I was in, I was on a trip to Cuba, and there were kids being brought to Cuba for treatment, young children that had suffered birth defects because of the nuclear radiation in the air. So, I mean, this was a couple of years ago, 2 years ago, and these kids were like 4 and 5, 6 and 7 and 8 and had all these deformities that were linked directly to the Chernobyl. But people say, oh, well, there's a Chernobyl, there's a Fukushima, but hey, nothing seems to be changing here in Michigan or Ohio or Indiana. You're Gar Smith, you're kind of chicken littling us. I mean, you know, we got enough to worry about. Why put this on our plates?
Well, boy, it seems like with every passing year, even every passing day, we have more to worry about. But that really means, if you're interested in survival, that we have more work to do. And one of the things that surprised me about this book, I initially said, you know, why do we need another book about nuclear energy? Everybody knows the horrible problems that we have with the technology. But I did find myself surprised on a number of accounts. One thing was the degree which the regulatory agencies, not just in the U.S., but around the world, and the governments, time and again, when there are these great disasters, you find the same pattern. There's this original, initial denial that there's a problem, if they say anything at all, and then an attempt to minimize the problem, and then an attempt to say, well, we'll just have to figure out ways to live with the problem. But this problem isn't one that we can live with, as we've seen from the kids suffering from the effects of Chernobyl and the children who have very similar cases of hydrocephaly and deformations, missing limbs and twisted bodies in the cities of Fallujah and Basra in Iraq that were exposed to nuclear depleted uranium weapons and are now suffering horrible mutations that look exactly like mutations that you find in the children of Chernobyl. This is a definite wake-up call. But a couple of the things that really surprised me when I was looking at the book was some new threats that I was not aware of. And this should really galvanize people who, you know, feel kind of la-di-da and laissez-faire about just another risk to our survival. And those are the risks from earthquakes and solar flares. This really got me concerned because this is not the long-term lingering danger of latent radioactivity in the atmosphere, groundwater, or soil. This is something that we know can happen in a year. You know, there was recently a big earthquake in Maine that rattled the folks in Boston.
Well, I was just going to say, earthquakes, that's something that you Californians have to worry about. We don't have to worry about it here in Michigan, do we?
Well, it turns out, although we do have 11 coastal reactors that are operating near earthquake zones on the Pacific Coast and the Gulf of Mexico, the NRC recently determined that the greatest earthquake danger is in the Midwest to the Southeast, where the majority of our nuclear plants are located.
Yeah, that's, what is it? I don't know what they call it, the Madrid or the Madrid Fault, right?
Yeah, the New Madrid Fault.
Madrid, yeah.
One of the largest quakes that's ever hit the continental United States. And that, the last time that hit, it toppled church steeples in Philadelphia. It just rocked the entire eastern coast. And my understanding is that the East Coast has a fairly secure plate of solid mass underneath the soil, and it's like ringing a bell. If you hit it at one edge, that reverberation goes, you know, 1,000 miles right into Canada.
Well, Gar Smith, your book, Nuclear Roulette, The Truth About the Most Dangerous Energy Source on Earth, also has a foreword I didn't mention by Jerry Mander, who I recently interviewed, and the late Ernest Kallenbach, who wrote Ecotopia, written in the 80s, I believe, maybe even the early 80s, but worth taking a look at. The book is published by Chelsea Green Publishing. You can go to chelseagreen.com. There'll be a link on my website, Peter Werbe, Werbe.com. You mentioned at the beginning of the program that nuclear power rested on three legs: hubris, arrogance that we talked about, denial that you mentioned, and, well, I forgot the third. Which was that?
Deception.
No deception. Who's deceiving us? Not the industry. Would they do anything like that? Not the government.
Well, those are the likely suspects. Yeah, the familiar suspects. Here's something that the Associated Press pulled together. They won a reporting award for this. In 2011, they poured through more than 11,000 Nuclear Regulatory Commission documents to see how the regulators were regulating. And what they determined was, quote, federal regulators have been working closely with the nuclear industry to keep the nation's aging reactors operating within safety standards by repeatedly weakening those standards or simply failing to enforce them. There's something called pencil engineering, which is basically coming up with the answer that would allow you to keep doing what you're already doing. And we have reactors that were, some of them, they were designed back in the era when people were using pencils and slide rules. This is before computers. And these things are still operating into the 30, 40 year. And instead of closing them down, the industry is so invested in these mausoleum artifacts of technology that they will do anything to keep them running. It will cost a fortune to decommission these things and demolish them. So, yeah, it's just human nature, right? You don't want to pay a lot of extra money. You don't want to go out of business. So you do anything you can to keep the old operation running. And the risk is that the more these devices age, the more they leak, the more they crack, the more they fail. And we're seeing it time and again with increasing frequency. We got two plants in San Onofre that were just benefited with brand new steam generators from Japan Mitsubishi. And 2 years into the operation, these things start breaking down. Hydrogen gas starts leaking. Radioactivity is spewing over the countryside. And the first thing that the operators say is, oh, there's been no leak. And then they say, oh, there's been a leak, but it's small. And then this phrase that you so frequently hear, you begin to think that there's nothing in the world safer than the wafting aroma of radiation, because nobody in the industry ever says it's dangerous. There's always no danger to the public, or even better, no immediate danger.
That's what I always hear when every time I interview one of the spokespeople from the energy companies, for sure.
Yeah. Right. But the key word there is immediate, no immediate danger. Initially, the Russian government said that only 31 liquidators died. As of 2005, as many as 112,000 to 125,000 of these men and some women have died.
Yeah. Well, but there's not the political will. We haven't heard anything from President Obama or candidate Romney about nuclear power. They often, I remember in listening to President Obama, he often talks positively about nuclear energy. I mean, he wants solar and he wants coal and he wants, I mean, you know, he's trying to satisfy everybody, right?
Yeah. You had Bill Clinton, who was a triangulator, and you've got Barack Obama, who's kind of an amalgamator. He's trying, but not as bad as Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney, the neo-moderate, who is suddenly agreeing with almost everything that Barack Obama's positions are. So it makes for very boring but strangely entertaining debates. The Obama administration has offered twice as much support for the nuclear industry in terms of loan guarantees. It's kind of appalling to see this happen. But the most extravagantly worrisome bit of news that's come our way, there was the good news from Japan that they had decided to close down all their 50 nuclear power plants by 2040, 2030. And then in the middle of September, they kind of changed their position. The people wanted these plants closed. The Japanese parliament wanted the plants closed. The government just said they were going to close the plants. And then suddenly the government says, you know, we're rethinking this. Huh. Maybe there is a future for nuclear power. And what we found out was that the change in voice was the result of U.S. intervention. There was a meeting that Secretary of State Clinton had in Vladivostok on a different matter, but she spoke to the Japanese representative and told him explicitly that the United States government and Congress were concerned that that Japan's plan to close its nuclear power program would have dire consequences for the U.S. energy system. And they wanted Japan to know that the wish from the highest quarters in the United States was that Japan would maintain its nuclear commitment. Wants it. That's what the Nikkei News Service reported that Secretary Clinton told the officials from Japan.
Well, what about Germany? Aren't they supposed to be getting off the nuclear track?
Oh, Germany is going great guns. Probably a bad phrase. But yeah, Merkel, she's amazing because she was so pro-nuclear. She's her career was as a quantum chemist studying subatomic reactions, and so. But the thing was, she saw the images coming out of Fukushima, and that did it for her. She realized that everything that she had been told about the safety of nuclear power was bogus. So she's now planning to close down all of Germany's 17 reactors, just decommission them.
Carr Smith, let me interrupt you. I see by the clock. I mean, this is so vital and so important, but that's why you've written Nuclear Roulette. But I just want to ask a final question. And it doesn't seem like there's then what you've just said. There doesn't seem to be any political will in the United States to address the problem of nuclear reactors. And I wonder if there was what it would look like, because a lot of jobs depend on it. You know, every one big industry like that, there's all these ancillary employment that goes with it. So two questions just quickly. What there is no, am I correct, there is no political will to speak of? And secondly, what would be the effect?
Well, there is no political will because of the money involved. And unfortunately, our country is being more and more governed by aggregate wealth. So this has to continue to stem from the grassroots. And there's a lot of money to be made and a lot of jobs to be created in closing down nuclear power plants and decommissioning them. That's for starters. But there's also a lot of money and jobs to be realized by turning toward renewable sources of energy. Germany has added 300,000 new green-collar jobs in the last couple of years just because of the solar transition. But, yeah, people have to start demanding that our lives not be put at risk. And it is an immediate thing because an earthquake can happen tomorrow. Solar flares, we're entering a solar maximum. NASA has warned that a solar flare could knock out our grids and leave us without power for years, a matter of weeks to years. We could really be living out this television fantasy revolution where the power goes out across the United States.
Mm-hmm.
That could happen to us tomorrow. There are fairly affordable ways that we can prepare for this. We can install ground transistors and protective transformers. It's not going to cost that much money. Congress had a chance to do it 2 years ago, and the Senate bailed. This is something everybody should demand. Those solar flares are not going to stop. We've had a case in 1921 where a solar flare knocked out the telecommunications systems in the United States. But in 1921, it was radios and telegraph systems. Today we have a huge grid. We have televisions. We have planes and satellites and factories and nuclear power plants that are all controlled by electronics that could get fried. And all of these systems would suddenly fail. Planes would fall from the sky. Nuclear power plants would melt down. There would be no way to maintain the fuel supplies, the food supplies.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it with that grim possibility. But there is some hope, and the only hope and change is in us. And as my guest, Gar Smith, has said, it becomes incumbent upon us to make some demands about what our lives are going to be affected by. Nuclear energy production is the worst. In fact, Gar Smith's book, Nuclear Roulette, is apt. The truth about the most dangerous energy source on Earth. You can go to chelseagreen.com. You can find it there. And also on my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. Gar Smith, as usual, thanks for being on the broadcast.
Thank you, Peter. And if there's time, could I add that the last third of the book is full of solutions?
That is important. Thank you so much.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Thanks for rocking with the Riff online. This is WRIF.com.
How would you like to see customers through your door today, and the next day, and the day after that? I have the answer you're looking for, riffdeals.com. Hey, you're online now. Just click on the banner in the player window to find out more. Remember, there's no upfront cost to you. It's a partnership, but your success is the goal. WRAF's marketing pros work with you to develop the perfect deal. Then, riffdeals.com uses the power of on-air, online, and social media marketing to help you reach new customers. Oh, did I mention that you get a check within 10 days of your successful deal running? That's cash in your pocket and customers in the door.
No matter how much our kids amaze us, they can't run for Michigan Supreme Court this year. That's why they need judges who stand up for them.
Michigan Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick have spent their careers protecting families and victims of crime.
From getting criminals off our streets to keeping kids out of gangs, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick are keeping families safer.
As mothers and advocates for children, Connie Kelly, Sheila Johnson, and Bridget McCormick have zero tolerance for violence against women and kids.
Unlike current Michigan Supreme Court justices who suggest sexual harassment is protected as free speech and ruled corporations have no responsibility to prevent workplace assault or even rape, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick take violence against women seriously.
Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick.
These three protect families.
Paid for by the Michigan Democratic State Central Committee, not authorized by any candidate committee.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werbe.
Thank you very much for joining me. Peter Werbe here with you. Well, it was Bob Seger that said Detroit, the home of rock and roll. And, boy, he used to say that over on Riff all the time. And how true it is. But certainly other genres of music, jazz and R&B and soul and gospel have all found their home here in the Motor City. And there are so many personalities, so many people that made the world of music come alive. We are so lucky. And we're so lucky that so many people have taken note of this, that it hasn't just been what we are left with on albums or CDs, that people are actually writing about them. And one person who has done so is Susan Whitehall. She's an award-winning music journalist and author of Women of Motown. She's here in the studio with me, has a brand new book, and she is also the music and feature writer for the Detroit News. Susan Whitehall, also an old friend. I don't want to leave that out. Hi, Susan.
Hi, Peter.
And, you know, I was telling my wife, I said, gee, yeah, I just interviewed Susan not so long ago about her book about the Women of Motown, and then I see it's 1995.
Yeah,
but a brand new book. Do you remember Fever? You probably remember it by Julie London, but you may remember that it was actually written by a Detroiter, Little Willie John, and the name of the book is Fever, Little Willie John, A Fast Life, Mysterious Death. Now, this is something I'm going to learn about, and The Birth of Soul. Susan Whitehall is the author and written with Kevin John, his son, and also the foreword by Stevie Wonder. And Susan Whitehall, welcome to the broadcast.
Thank you.
How does one choose? What of all the personalities here in Detroit that made the world of music go round? Why Little Willie John?
Well, you know, when I've done a lot of interviewing for about stories about Motown, talking to Berry Gordy and all the, it was always fascinated me what led to Motown and all the pre-Motown stuff, because really Motown was one of many labels at the time. He didn't even start it till 1959. And all this other stuff had been going on that led to it, helped, enabled him to start a label. There were songwriters, there were record offices. They actually called it Record Row over on Alexandrine, right by Woodward. There were so many regional offices of record companies there, say Chess and King and labels like that. So people were getting signed out of Detroit onto these labels, and there was a whole scene going on. And Willie particularly fascinated me because he was such kind of like a shooting star. He had this brief, glorious career and then flamed out.
Died early.
Yeah, he died at only 30 in prison. And so I think as a result, he's been unjustly forgotten, not by musicians, by the way. They've never forgotten him.
You know, it's interesting. There was a period where white singers would pretty much, what do they used to call it? Not cleanse, but they would take black soul records, black R&B, and then redo them. I mean,
yeah,
some
crossover, yeah, it pop. Well, Peggy Lee did it famously with Fever.
Oh, am I wrong? It wasn't Julie London?
Yeah. Peggy Lee.
Ooh. Ooh.
You can cut that.
Ooh. She says, I can cut that. We don't cut anything.
I think Julie probably did it as well.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, the McCoys. Remember the McCoys had a version of Fever?
Sure, but it always kind of.
Yep.
All that finger popping.
And the finger snapping was Willie. He did that. And his was the original version, Detroit's own Pershing High dropout, Willie John. And so it's a Detroit guy who really started a lot of music like this that then went on to become famous by other people. But Fever was a big international hit by him as well. It was just in the R&B realm because things were more segregated back then.
Yeah, there was. There was white radio, and then there was also in Detroit, black stations, essentially. I can't remember.
WCHB and WJLB. He was played by those guys a lot.
You got an incredible foreword to your book, Fever, Little Willie John, by Stevie Wonder. What's the Stevie Wonder connection there?
Stevie just grew up listening to him on WCHB and Frantic Ernie particularly. Mm-hmm. He loved listening to Frantic Ernie, and Ernie was a big fan of Willie's and talked about him a lot. But Stevie's, his mother told him, don't call yourself Little Stevie Wonder unless you're as good as Little Willie John.
He told me that
some time ago. And there's also a connection there because Willie's younger son, Keith, sings backup for Stevie. And Stevie, when he found out, it's a great story I have in the book about how Stevie met Willie's sons. It was sort of a nice accident. And when he heard they could sing, and when he heard what they sound like, here are the sons of his idol, it was great.
Yeah.
He actually recorded a lot of music on them. Keith John Still, if you go see Stevie in concert, you'll see Keith.
Susan Whitehall is my guest. She's music writer for the Detroit News. And I was remiss in not saying you were also the editor of Detroit's fabulous Cream magazine, one of the seminal rock magazines in the country.
Yes.
You know, your book, and you're a wonderful writer, and yet it says Susan Whitehall with Kevin John. Usually what that means is the with means that's the person that wrote it. But now
Kevin kind of approached me, and we ran into each other by accident at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I had talked to him on the phone before. And I was walking in with the Funk Brothers one time and ran into Kevin, and he just suggested, hey, have you ever thought of writing a book about my father? And he said he and the family would cooperate with me, and it's because they cooperated with me, we did it in conjunction, that they let me use not only personal family photographs, but also have access to Willie's letters, which is huge. You know, you can't legally use letters, quote from them without permission of the person or their survivors. And they let me quote from one of his letters and see the entire one and several of them. And just the cooperation for the family was really helpful. So that's in respect to the family that. I did the writing, and Kevin and I did do some interviews together, and that was very interesting and fun. Some of Willie's old band, who were called the Upsetters, they also played behind James Brown, behind Little Richard. The Upsetters were a great band. We tracked down some of them, and I know they had a real warm feeling towards doing these interviews, in part because of Kevin's participation, that this was the son of their great friend and their lead singer, you know. So, in a way, it really did help with some of the people we talked to. That Kevin was involved in. And like I said, he did help me interview some people.
And terrific photos, as you were mentioning, that fill out the book. Fever, Little Willie John, A Fast Life, Mysterious Death, and The Birth of Soul, written by Susan Whitehall. You were mentioning the foreword by Stevie Wonder, and then you mentioned the legendary Detroit DJ Ernie Durham, or Frantic Ernie. And it's interesting, Stevie Wonder in the foreword only calls him Ernie Durham, which was his name, but he went under the title of Frantic Ernie, and he would speak in rhymes.
Yeah.
What he used to say, I remember when I was a kid, I would actually take one of these little radios to bed because, the parents are listening to Frank Sinatra and all that, and here we're listening to this black music like that, and this guy is saying, we'll be right back with a stack of shellac, which meant, 78, so they were doing well.
Didn't he say, see you on the flip side or something?
See you on the flip side. That was it, yeah. And that when there used to be a flip side. Now there's no more flip sides. Susan Whitehall, I can't believe how fast the time is going. Let's get into this story a little more. Fever, Little Willie John, A Fast Life, Mysterious Death, and The Birth of Soul. It's Titan Books. You can go to titanbooks.com. Is there a website for? I should have asked you this before. Is there a website just for the book itself, or should we?
You can go to amazon.com if you can't find it in your bookstore and order the book that way. The book is on the Titan website. Yeah,
and
we have Random House distribution in the States. So
okay, and I'll have a I'll have a link on my website, peterwerby.com. So he was this mercurial character. I mean, when he, Little Willie John, they called Little Stevie Wonder because he started when he was a kid. Why did they call Little Willie John?
He was literally 12 years old when he did his first record.
Okay.
Actually 14.
Thing. Yeah.
And it was a Christmas song he did locally, and you know, Robin Seymour played it all the at the time. This was like 1951. And there were a lot of dance party TV shows locally. He was on all of those as a kid. And then he ran off with this Paul Williams Orchestra as a 16-year-old and sang a lot of that stuff. He sang the big song that Paul had in the late 40s, the Hucklebuck. And
okay.
He's very versatile a singer, Willie was, because he sang with these big bands, and then he segged into R&B, and he could do rock, he could do country. He did a version of She Thinks I Still Care before George Jones did, and it's the version, Willie's, that Elvis heard. I loved having an Elvis connection in the book, because I already had a Beatles connection. Elvis heard Willie's version, went nuts, had it brought to his house, played it over and over. So even a country song like that that we associate with George Jones so strongly, actually Willie cut it first.
So he had influence on a lot of people.
Yeah.
That's amazing. You a Beatles?
Yeah.
How could that happen?
Leave My Kitten Alone, which is one of the great lost Beatles sides. It didn't get released in 64 when they recorded it. Great John Lennon vocal. They used to do that song live. Now, that's originally Willie's song. His version came out, and he co-wrote it in, like, 1959. And I know Lennon had to have heard it. In Liverpool, they'd get all these great R&B records brought over by the Seamen. And he loved R&B. Lennon did. So the Beatles had that as part of their set, their live set. And then they recorded it in 64. But for unknown reasons, they didn't put it on the album. They put Mr. Moonlight instead, which is a horrible song. Beatles 65, yeah. So it was bootlegged heavily because fans loved it and somehow got hold of their version of Leave My Kitten Alone. But it wasn't a legitimate release until Beatles Anthology in the mid-90s. And at that point, his widow got a huge check from... because of the Beatles version, the biggest check that she'd ever gotten from Willie's music, which was it's wonderful.
And you said she just lives not too far from where we're broadcasting.
Right, in Detroit with Keith John, too, her son.
That's amazing.
You know, and I got that through to Paul McCartney through his publicist. I wanted him to know that story.
Well, you just did a wonderful story on Sir Paul when he was just in town for his big Comerica concert at Motown Museum.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you were close enough to him. What was his reaction? Did he really feel like he was there also at the roots of the Beatles? Because they were so influenced by the music from Detroit.
Oh, they were. I couldn't believe he hadn't been there before. But when you think about it, during the heyday when they came here so often, it wasn't a museum, you know. It was just, Esther Gordy Edwards was over there with a small staff. But now it's a full-fledged museum. It's been recreated the way Berry Gordy's apartment was, Studio A. Yeah. And it was great. He loved Studio A the most. That was what he was most excited to go see.
Really?
Where the musicians were. He loved James Jamerson, the bass player.
Yeah, yeah. Wonderful. And Jamerson just was inducted to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Was it a couple of years ago? A couple years ago, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So finally the Funk Brothers got the recognition that they deserved. Did Little Willie John, I mean, in some ways he got the recognition to some extent during his life, but it ended.
Ended very quickly.
Yeah, and you say mysterious death. What were the circumstances?
Because, you know, it was the spring of 1968, which is when Martin Luther King was murdered, and it was a real tumultuous spring news-wise, and Jesse Jackson was supposed to get involved in finding out what happened. Basically, Willie was imprisoned for a murder, and he got more time than he should have. Even the prosecutor who I tracked down said that. It was a case of a lot of different people in a house in an after-hours joint in Seattle. Somebody was knifed who had been making trouble and fighting with everybody. It could have been Willie. It could have been a number of people in the house. But he was basically the outsider, so he took the fall. And even if it was him, he shouldn't have gotten as much time as he did. And it was definitely self-defense. The guy was huge compared to Willie. And there were many, many other shadowy, you know, happenings at the time that even the prosecutor told me that he thought Willie dying in prison at only 30, that he believed he was beaten to death, for instance. And
well, they said, you say in your book, Fever, Little Willie John, A Fast Life, Mysterious Death, and the Birth of Soul, that it was officially recorded as a heart attack.
Yeah, and yet they told the family he had pneumonia, and that he died of pneumonia. So it was varying reports, and the prosecutor also heard that it was pneumonia, and you get pneumonia, he said, when you have fluid in the lungs, and you get fluid in the lungs after a beating.
Hmm.
So it's his wife at the time, Darlin, now his widow, got letters from other prisoners telling them that he was being mistreated. And, you know, Willie could be a little feisty and mouthy, and it's very conceivable that something like that happened. And she passed those letters on to Jesse Jackson. He was about to try to do something and look into it, but then Martin Luther King died, and that took up all of his attention. So Willie died in May of 1968. Boom, gone.
So you never definitively got to the bottom of it. It's a mystery still. It's not a mystery solved.
Well, it is. A grand jury would have to take it up and look into it again. But it's clear, you know, the prosecutor himself who put him in prison thinks he was murdered. So
you said he could be a little mouthy. In Wikipedia, it says Willie John was known for his short temper and propensity to abuse alcohol. Did you?
Short temper is kind of, it's partly Wikipedia and things like that that made me want to write the book. Because
it's
like this ridiculous little haiku, and you don't know who wrote those things.
Right.
I always warn people off Wikipedia. He didn't have any more of a temper than anyone I've never researched. He was the life of the party always, but, you know, he ran in rough circles at that time, and R&B world could be rough. And if someone pushed him around, he grew up in the north end of Detroit, he would push back. So this guy whomped him in the face, kind of socked him. 6'4", Willie didn't care. He wasn't going to let that happen. And as far as temper, you know, I can't really say that. Definitely he did have an alcohol problem towards the end. He did, the last few years. And that impacted his books, his bookings, his gigs. And
Not unusual for rock and rollers and R&Bers to have substance problems. There's almost something, not exclusively so, but so many creative people have, I don't know, problems, I guess. I mean, you think of all the rock and rollers. I mean, there's a whole book filled with testimonials of drug and alcohol abusing famous rockers. So, like I say, this doesn't seem to be unusual or so.
Well, they start so early, and they also, I think, people want to come down and relax after an extremely intense onstage experience, you know.
They're very intense people because, I mean, the creative spirit, as listeners, it relaxes us often. I mean, it may excite us, but ultimately it's taken us away from the cares of the world. We don't have to worry about this or that. We're almost living the creative output of somebody else. And the idea of being up in front of, say, I don't know, some of these people singing in front of 100,000 people, you know, I have trouble remembering my name sometimes when I'm broadcasting, let alone I think these people are remembering every word of their song is always amazing. My guest is Susan Whitehall. She is the author of Fever, Little Willie John, A Fast Life, Mysterious Death, and the Birth of Soul. It's published by Titan Books. You can go to titanbooks.com. Be a link on my website, peterwerby.com. The Birth of Soul, how instrumental is he in the music that comes after him?
How influential?
Influential, that's a better word, right?
Well, very much so. B.B. King told me he still listens to him every day. But
really?
In terms of younger players, Stevie Wonder said he can hear Willie's influence in Usher, say. And, unfortunately, I think sometimes you can't hear him enough because Willie wasn't a singer to be part of the whole excessive thing where you hear on American Idol all the time where they're over-singing and they're going too far from the melody. Stevie points out, and other people have too, that Willie always knew his way back to the melody. He wouldn't get too far off. He wouldn't get carried away with all this other stuff. And that's something that's been sadly, you look at from Beyonce and all the other current singers that are really hot, that's something that's been lost a little bit.
I wonder whether he's not exactly a household name, but I wonder mm-hmm. in your experience when you've talked to people, anybody from colleagues to people, if you've done other like book launches and whatever, I mean, do people go, I never heard of him, or who's that, or do people know who he is?
A lot of people I talk to are musicians,
yeah.
and so like Peter Wolf went nuts when I told him of
really?
J. Geils Band, yeah.
yeah.
He told me this great story about how this girlfriend, when he was like a teenager, told him about some record shop that had been abandoned, and they went down there and scooped up all these King records, and including he got a lot of 45s by Little Willie John, and it just he was blown away. He's a huge fan. Steve Miller, of all things, who's going to be in town this week. When I told him last year that I was doing this, he gave me his email address and said, "Email me when that book is done. I'm buying it." So he's a huge rock memoir fan, biographies, but he loves Little Willie John. So the kind of the circles I hang in, which aren't, I'm not saying rock stars, but musicians, local musicians, and people who love music, most haven't forgotten him. But further than that, the general population, sure, he's become more obscure, which is partly why nobody's written a book about him. And I thought, I lucked out because yeah. it's such a dramatic story.
I think that's true with a few exceptions of, it's now a couple generations ago that Little Willie John is part of. And, you lose that sort of that train there.
Yeah.
And now we think that, if you think about it, like say in the 60s when rock and roll really took off for mass audiences and the kind of rock that's played on this station, for instance, if we would have talked about music 50 years before that, it would have been like honky-tonk piano
but,
or something.
But J. Geils Band, Steve Miller Band,
yeah.
that's part of the texture of the station. And this is the guy that those guys listened to and were influenced by. And plus, he was young when he died. If he had lived, he would have been part of the soul explosion. Stax,
sure.
Motown. He probably would have been on Stax, I think. He would have gotten off King. And he would have, Sam Moore was totally influenced by Willie. Those guys, he would have been right there with him doing the same kind of thing. And that's why I had Birth of Soul in the title, because he really led to the soul explosion. He just didn't live long enough to benefit from it.
Yeah. And he went to Pershing High? Did
Pershing, yeah.
yeah.
He was a Pershing doughboy.
Yeah. And where did Stevie Wonder, where did he go to school? You know?
He had actually Lansing School for the Blind.
Oh, that's right.
But so even though they lived in the city, I think it was Greenwood.
Yeah.
I had a friend who lived around the corner from Stevie. He used to see him standing out in his little tuxedo on the front waiting for the Motown car to come pick him up. it was like Greenwood, I think. And he had a tutor on the road, Stevie, and then he went to the Lansing School for the Blind.
Well, your book about Little Willie John, I mean, all writing is always work, but it must have been fun.
It must have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
To be able to talk about stuff like this and recreate that world, because it's very different from the writing I do at the news, obviously.
We did this kind
of thing at Cream Magazine, though. We had this column at Cream called Unsung Heroes of Rock and Roll, in which we would kind of do this. We would go a generation before and talk about the guys like, what's the guy's name? This whole generation of jump blues guys, Louis Jordan is one.
Right.
R&B blues, jump blues, who led to the rock and roll music we were all listening to and writing about. So that sort of Cream's Unsung Heroes column kind of influenced me as well.
Well, Susan Whitehall is a wonderful writer, and she's just done a marvelous job with the book Fever, Little Willie John, A Fast Life, Mysterious Death, and the Birth of Soul. Kevin John, Little Willie John's son, helped out with this. Got an incredible foreword by Stevie Wonder, and we didn't even mention Dave Marsh also, who came up with
Pontiac Sound.
Yeah, with Cream Magazine, and so it's a terrific read. Check it out. It is published by Titan Books. TitanBooks.com is where you can go. There'll also be a link on my website, PeterWerby.com, and you can read Susan Whitehall's work, columns, reports, reviews in the Detroit News.
Oh,
Susan,
there.
As usual.
Oh, there's a Facebook page for the book, too.
Oh,
check it out.
Okay. We got all that. Thank you for being on the broadcast.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Detroit's Rock Station. On the web, thanks for listening to WRIF.com.
No matter how much our kids amaze us, they can't run for Michigan Supreme Court this year. That's why they need judges who stand up for them.
Michigan Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick have spent their careers protecting families and victims of crime.
From getting criminals off our streets to keeping kids out of gangs, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick are keeping families safer.
As mothers and advocates for children, Connie Kelly, Sheila Johnson, and Bridget McCormick have zero tolerance for violence against women and kids.
Unlike current Michigan Supreme Court justices who suggest sexual harassment is protected as free speech and ruled corporations have no responsibility to prevent workplace assault or even rape, Kelly, Johnson, and McCormick take violence against women seriously.
Supreme Court candidates Judge Connie Kelly, Judge Sheila Johnson, and family advocate Bridget McCormick.
These three protect families.
Paid for by the Michigan Democratic State Central Committee, not authorized by any candidate committee.
Thanks for listening to 101 WRIF on the World Wide Web at WRIF.com.
Thank you.
Most WRIF contests are open to legal U.S. residents at least 18 years old. Winners may win only one contest every 30 days or every 6 months for prizes worth $600 or more. Employees and their family of Greater Media Detroit, its advertising agencies, and other radio stations in the metro area may not participate. No purchase necessary. Prizes are not transferable, and rules are subject to change at any time. Complete rules are available online at WRIF.com or at the WRIF studios during regular business hours.
More Riff Rock now. 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.
Chill. Right on the side is my ego become. I smoke the child with the wood on my tongue. Feel like intake of breath and my mouth is clear. So while I stand on my spit, dream of you. Have you ever made out dark away? This way, I guess I made your day. I say, play the tracks in your record collection. It's your mission. Congratulations.
Change a lot of names on songs. Know that we have always been down, down. If I ever get a thank you, you. Let's go.
down. No, I lost a lot of friends there, baby. I got no time to mess around. So if you want it,